powered from the Palatial Perdomo Cigar Studios on the Black Stage in Indian Trail, North Carolina, and broadcasting from the Drew Estate Studio in California. It's episode 154 of the Primetime Show. Tonight, it's our 10th media panel as we welcome Erica Thompson of Cigar Dojo, Ben Lee of Stogie Review, and Cigar Hustler Mike, now AKA Media Hustler Mike, for an industry panel discussion you won't want to miss. And as always, the Primetime Show is sponsored by De Los Reyes Cigars. De Los Reyes Cigars introduces another chapter of the saga Celez. Celez is a Spanish word that means leisure after work. In the spirit of the standing idea of owning your own journey and making your own saga, the saga Celez is the perfect companion to enrich those moments of choice, making them truly yours. The saga Celez carries a blend of Criollo Olor and Piloto Cubano wrapped in a selected Ecuador-shaped Claro wrapper that generously delivers with elegance a surprisingly rich and balanced smoke. It's available in three sizes at an affordable price. Be sure to ask your retail for Saga Celez. And by Perdomo Cigars, awarded Nicaraguan Cigar of the Year in 2014 by Cigar Journal, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary brand has consistently earned the highest scores in the industry, and it's a top seller in humidors around the world. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary blend requires tobaccos that have been carefully hand-selected and are well-aged for a minimum of 8 years. Perdomo 20th Anniversary is offered in three distinct wrappers: a smooth, creamy Ecuadorian Connecticut, a rich, earthy Cuban seed Nicaraguan Sungrown, and a dark, oily Cuban seed Nicaraguan Maduro. Combining these beautifully bourbon barrel-aged wrappers with thick, high-priming binder and filler tobaccos gives each blend a balanced complexity with layers of rich flavors and smooth, elegant aromas. Perdomo Cigars is a family-owned and operated company headquartered in Miami, Florida, with manufacturing and agricultural facilities in Esteli, Nicaragua. Perdomo's highly acclaimed cigar brands include the Perdomo Estate Selección Vintage, Perdomo Double Age 12-Year Vintage, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary, the Perdomo Reserve 10th Anniversary Line, the Perdomo Habano Bourbon Barrel Age, the Perdomo Lot 23, and many more. For great tasting notes and pairing information, check out the new Perdomo website at www.perdomocigars.com. And by Miami Cigar & Company. Nesta Miranda said it best: there is a mystery and depth to Africa that captivates my spirit, always drawing me to come back. This cigar, Don Lino Africa, captures the way going there makes me feel. Cigar making is an art form, but in the moment when the cigar becomes art itself, you have something special. Don Lino Africa returns to Miami Cigar & Company, the brand you remember, blended even more masterfully this time in partnership with Tabacalera A.J. Fernandez. An exotic and complex blend meant to mesmerize. It's available in 5 block sets with tollers. Don Lino Africa returns. Ask for it at your local retailer. And by Drew Estate, check out and download the Drew Diplomat app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. Available on iTunes and Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And as always, Drew Estate is the exclusive sponsor of all the live streaming for the Primetime Network of shows, as well as for the California studios for the Primetime Show. Welcome, everybody. This is Primetime episode 154. Today is Thursday, September 3rd, 2020. This is Will Cooper. I'm in the new Palatial Perdomo Cigar Studios. A lot more roomy here. And I'm joined cross-country in the Drew Estate Studios by my friend and colleague, Mr. Aaron Loomis.
How you doing tonight, Will?
I'm doing really, really good tonight. Can't complain right now.
You got a new T-shirt I can see?
I got my T-shirt, my Battle of the Bands T-shirt. I was wondering why if I was the only one who didn't get it. But you switched out of yours.
Yeah, I got a wardrobe change between shows. Can't wear the same outfit on every show I'm on. Come on.
Okay, a little diva action going on. I had a little tragedy. The Roku went out on the TV in the back there. I got a little nervous.
Uh-oh.
As the Flyers are in overtime right now. So
Maybe it's good that you don't get to see the massacre that's about to happen.
Well, the season is a success for me. I didn't have a lot of expectations going into the season. So I am very happy actually right now. I'd like to get to one more round. So, So at some point we'll see what happens with that. But we have a great show tonight. Aaron, I don't think we've done a media panel maybe since March.
Thinking. Sounds about right.
Yeah, we just haven't done one in a while. And I think it was a long time coming. And so I thought it was a good point to, bring back some of folks who've either been on the media panel or been on the show before. So I always like to have a different panel as much as possible here. So let's do the introductions here. He's a veteran panelist who's been on the show many times. He is coming at us from the Dojo Studios. The one and only Master Sensei, Eric Thompson. Eric, welcome back to Primetime.
Hey, Coop, Aaron, everybody. Thanks for having me. Couldn't be more excited to be hanging out with you guys on this lovely Thursday evening.
Yeah, well, I'm glad I didn't keep a game seven from you. I was like, actually worried about that. Like, if he's got game seven going on, he's not gonna be happy.
Yeah, I'll, so I'm glad I'll it's to, tomorrow. I'll have to miss that tomorrow night.
Your own show is gonna conflict with that. So hopefully, you know, it will be good result for you in game seven.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Yeah. Now coming at us from Texas, his new home. Also a veteran of the panel discussions for media. Always love having this guy on. The one and only Ben Lee of Stogie Review. Ben, welcome back to Primetime.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here again.
Appreciate it. How is Texas?
It was hot as hell. Now it's pretty nice. Like 77 degrees right now, low humidity.
Rub it in.
I had Bear on the show last week, and it was like 109. And he was doing it from his outdoors area, or not his garage, where it's like there's no ventilation in that thing.
Yeah, last week here and the week before is even worse. It was around like 107, 108 during the day with heat index about 150, 116. But the humidity wasn't too high, so it wasn't bad. So, you know, kind of like it was almost like Vegas with a little bit more humidity, though, but still, it wasn't bad. Now it's nice. It's real nice.
Yeah, that's good. That's good to hear. So you're all settled in Texas right now.
Yeah, trying to. I'm still working out my little patio area to smoke and, you know, set up for stuff like this. But, yeah, it's getting there. It's a work in progress.
Great, great, great to have you, Ben. Thanks for being on. And making – not his first time on the Primetime Show, but making his media panel debut – because I do, Mike, you are media, and I wanted to actually solidify that tonight.
That's very nice.
So you are media. You do a great job on the Cigar Hustlers podcast, of course, with Postani and the Cigar Hustler shop. He's a man who wears all hats. Really glad to have him on. I'm not gonna butcher his name tonight. Cigar Hustler Mike, welcome back to Primetime.
Thank you for having me, sir. And you're right. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, if Joe Rogan is considered media, I guess I'm media too, then, you know.
Well, we want to confirm that, and there's no doubt. So I've been
get a media badge for the next PCA, IPCPR, whatever the hell TPE thing.
Why you want to like basically be blamed for everything that happens at the show?
No, I'm perfectly fine with that. Bring it on. Sure.
All right.
You know what? I'll happily do that for you. If you want, I'll just take the media. And then if somebody says something to you, be like, you know what? It really wasn't my fault. I'm just here with him, and he's in charge of all media. And you need to speak to him. I'll have happily handle that. No
problem. Really good. Really good.
So, Coop, real quick. I think we have the person with the longest name and the person with the shortest name in the industry on the same show.
Yo.
It has to be, because I don't think there's anyone with a two-letter last name that I know of.
Ken Wu of LaMarca Cigars. W-U.
Oh, there you go.
He's not media.
Not media.
Not media, but media, sure. We do.
Yeah.
Because I don't think there's a media person with a longer name than Mike's.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really ran into anybody ever with a longer name than me. So. But, you know,
Eric gives you a little bit of a run for your money.
Yeah, heck yeah. I'm right in the running.
Yeah, and I happily mess up Eric's last name all the time. And and my response is normally, look, if somebody wants to dedicate 2-3 weeks of time learning my last name and getting it right, then I'll retort. But, you know.
There you go.
It's like, hey, we're good, you know. So.
Yeah. So we got a bunch of industry topics we're going to talk about tonight. We kind of just kind of led into it already. This first topic, I'm calling it, and there's a bunch of things in here, is I'm calling this the potential war that's about to break out between TPE and PCA next year. So where I'm kind of going with this is PCA is going – if everything – we're going to assume this is a – COVID's going to hopefully not be a problem. And that's another issue entirely, right? But if you look at this, TPE has been rescheduled from January to mid-May, and it's putting it 10 weeks before the PCA trade show. I'm saying I think this is going to cause some real conflicts for a lot of people this year, and I think it's going to have a lot of impacts here. So that's what this topic is tonight. We're going to hit first, and there's a bunch of points I'm going to hit in here. Okay. So let's start it off. First off, I'll ask everyone on the panel, will TPE get the upper hand by having this first trade show?
Eric?
Ben? Well, I mean, obviously, they were already kind of positioning themselves to have an upper hand. And then this change happened, so it definitely it's a big advantage for them. I mean, I know it's not the greatest reasonings in the world of why it's happening, but the fact that it is that close to the June or July show, you know, the PCA, yeah, I mean, that puts them in a rough spot, especially, you know, price-wise, cost-wise, and just everybody's just general skittishness to do anything at all. Like a TPE, you could commit to it for almost no money, and then if it doesn't happen, you know, it's not such a big deal. PCA, you commit to that, it's a lot of money and a lot of effort goes involved, and if it doesn't happen, you know, you lose a lot of money. So yeah, I think it's going to be rough on the PCA.
I think the real question is, what's the percentage of customers that TPE pulls out of from PCA? So if let's say that there's a 20% increase in customers going to TPE this year, and there's an uptick in cigar sales, you know, I think that they're really smart to include everything as far as CBD and, you know, everything else that's kind of under the sun, vaping and so on and so forth. So let's say that some of those customers wind up going to TPE, and they're not going to jump back on a plane 6 weeks later and go back out to PCA. So where is that number that it is no longer advantageous for your small and medium manufacturers and brand owners, and it really puts kind of a deficit on your bigger guys? You know, if it's 20% and they can succeed in that, can PCA survive after that is really the question. So,
yeah, that's a valid point. So far, I'm in agreement with both you guys said. Ben, how about you?
And it's really smart to do it first, you know, TPE go firsthand.
I actually thought it was going to be the other way around at some point, where I don't know where I thought PCA may try to move it. I shouldn't say the other way around. I thought PCA was going to try to move the show up earlier. Obviously, COVID probably prevented that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if they do that, I think that would have been the best thing for them. Unfortunately, that's not where they kind of stand, you know. And they're the more expensive show, you know. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to kind of, like you said, I have many hats, and like the TPE experience was definitely unique. It wasn't like there was a tremendous amount of traffic cigar wise, but it still was advantageous. There were still sales, you know, there was still time that you got to spend with everybody. And that's the big part about these conventions, right? So if you can alleviate the cost for the manufacturers and the brand owners and even incentivize retailers to come in, you know, PCA's got a major uphill battle. Major uphill battle. And it just got a hell of a lot worse because of the coronavirus.
I'm in agreement. Ben Lee, your thoughts?
It's going to be a little bit difficult. I mean, having them so close, will retailers go to both shows? You know, I mean, I don't know if it's even worth it anymore, especially now doing so many, like in my industry and IT industry, they're doing a lot of shows virtually. And they're actually working out very, very well. This one's a little bit different because you got to put your hand on product and stuff a lot of times, but I don't know if we'll ever see trade shows the way they used to be before COVID-19. So I just don't know. I'm not really sure. I don't know who would even have the upper hand in these two. I mean, TPE is cheaper to go to, correct? So I would think for mid to smaller size companies, that would be the more one that would be appealing them more. But then again, it's a multifaceted show, whereas PCA is geared more just for cigars, basically. So it's a big decision for a company, especially a smaller company, to decide if one, both, or any of them is worth even going to ever again, really.
I mean, I think that there's something to be said about person-to-person contact, especially in this industry, right? You know, I can tell you that even with some of the people on this panel, I became closer with them by meeting them out at those conventions, right?
Yeah.
And that makes a huge difference. And I think that that's really the major priority for those conventions. And that isn't something that that's going to be tangible via a gigantic virtual meeting or anything of that magnitude. You know, when it's all said and done, when the orders are over, we all go out, we all sit somewhere, we have a few cigars, we BS a little. You get to hear some horrific stories about stuff in the industry. If you're lucky enough to be around Pete Hernandez, it's always epic. Those are the types of things that I think have the most value overall. So it's kind of imperative that that continues. How that's going to continue moving forward with the coronavirus and I hope there's a vaccine soon, I think the statistics are showing that at this point, I mean, obviously if you have pre-existing conditions, you're over 65 plus, you know, then you have some problems. If you're under that, you have a very good chance of survival, right? I mean, I know I'm not saying anything that nobody knows at this point, but I'm a big proponent of a return to normalcy. I'm willing to take that calculated risk, and I hope that other retailers, media people, manufacturers, brand owners, they're also willing to take that risk. The real question is going to be, will the juice be worth the squeeze after TPE? You know, I think that people will go out. I think people are going to go out to those things, to go out to TPE, and especially it was gaining momentum. You know, I didn't go 2 years prior. I went last year, and the guys who went the year prior said, this is already getting bigger. This is way bigger than it was last year for cigars. And if they have their sights on that, it's going to be bigger, and they're going to be first of the table. You know, being first is a big deal.
Oh, and it now, like I said, you're putting this right on the heels of it. Right. And companies are going to have some decisions to make. Are they going to exhibit at both shows or not? I mean, it's like, it's a fair, you know, are they going to, you know, are they going to maybe hold? I think the PCA loyalists will hold back for PCA. Like, they won't do much at TPA. But I think there's going to be a bunch of people that are going to want to get the jump on everyone else right now.
I think that the people that hold back are foolish. You know, I think that the realistic approach for the PCA is to incentivize and start driving down some of their costs. I don't know how they're going to do that. I've never seen their books, but I'm sure that a lot of, you know, money goes into the political side of protecting the cigar industry. I mean, that's quite apparent. I'm a PCA supporter. It just seems like, man, if you didn't think it could get any worse at the end of, you know, July of last year, and then all of a sudden, bam, you have this coronavirus. It's going to be tough, man. It's going to be real tough, you know. And then you had the four brands, the major brands, pull out. I know that there was negotiations of possibly giving them board seats or somebody a board seat, so they had a voice at the table. Hopefully that comes to terms. If it doesn't, that's another big hit that, you know, it's going to be tough to recoup from. So how do you adjust your costs? How do you adjust your pricing so that it makes sense for people to show up? And, you know, maybe don't do it in Vegas. I mean, you know, Vegas feels played out to me, especially at the convention center, you know, or even the Sahara. Like, you know, the approach, the way that we were treated as far as just general cigar smokers, you know, you thought we were demons. You cannot smoke in specific places. You will be fined $30,000. Do not pass go. We are going to steal one of your children. I mean, like, I like all my kids. I don't want to lose any of them because I want to smoke in the hallway. You know, just let me smoke. No, don't worry. It's not a cigar. This is weed. Oh, okay. Go, continue. Like, come on, man. You know, like, how the hell did we get here is really the crazy part of all of that. You know, I just don't understand it.
Aaron, what do you think? Do you think they get an upper hand?
Yeah, Aaron.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of factors that go into play. One is, you know, depending on when and if the coronavirus thing kind of dies down, people are just going to be dying to get out of the house or get out of their shop, right? So if Vegas is an open opportunity for them to get together with a bunch of people and travel somewhere. Obviously, the first one is going to have an advantage there. I think there were some brands that had held off on releasing stuff this year, planning to release a TPE next year anyway. So with it moving back to May, some brands may decide, hey, let's fire in May so that the retailers can start buying it. Hopefully they start rolling in before summer hits so that they can sell in the busy season for, Northeast and, the North and stuff like that, where it's starting to become, smoking weather. So I think a lot of that plays in. Plus, you get, if they continue with the incentives, you have to put all those things together and see what's more attractive to people. But having another show, 2 months later is just like, is there something? Is there a bunch of stuff new in those, 8 to 10 weeks that is going to drive me to go out here? Is there something else that's going to drive me to go out here? Obviously the one that goes first has an advantage, especially when it's only like a 2 month difference. If it was still January, July, you got enough of a gap there that you might have a little bit of, room to, make sense about it. But, TPE is definitely in the driver's seat to, with whatever, additional incentives they want to do or, anything else that they can coordinate ahead of time is going to, they have the upper hand.
Yeah. Do you guys think that they go pedal to the metal with the incentives this year now that they've got, I don't know if they like being the first trade show of the year. I think they've always done it, but they've got to be thinking this is a chance here to really make this thing pop. And did they go pedal to metal, you think, with the incentives? That's what's gotten a lot of people out there in previous years.
Yeah, I think they do. But think about this. They already give so many incentives. I mean, how much more can they, offer? Like,
right.
Scott, they have to be able to, pay for the floor space. I mean, I know the money situation is different with them because of who owns them and that kind of stuff. But still, there comes a point when, you can't be losing millions of dollars either. So, but I agree that I think that they could, at least marketing wise, media wise, that kind of thing, they could maybe like go pedal to the metal there and continue the other things that they already offer. And that will put them in a fantastic position. I don't know that they, do you guys think that they sit around and like, think like, how can we stick it to the PCA or yep, are they just
do that?
Yeah, I mean, maybe
I would.
It is business.
It'd be bad
business
if they didn't. Yeah,
yeah,
it'd be
right,
bad business
right.
If they didn't think about it.
You know what's funny? I've asked both parties about this. I've asked the TPE and I've asked Scott. I said, hey, I've asked Scott of PCA. I said, Scott, what are the TPE people doing around signing up people for booze, right, at the PCA trade show? And then vice versa. I saw the PCA people at TPE doing booth signings for their show, right? This co-op, they say they're like in co-opetition sort of. I don't know how they're going to continue to go down that path right now. There's just going to be head-to-head scenarios now where people are going to be making a decision between one trade show or the other because they're just not going to have the budget to do or the time to kind of do it both in a 10-week period.
I think if one takes a big hit, that co-op relationship is over. Without question.
Yeah.
It's done. I mean, yeah, they'll come into their panel or whatever, the other team's convention with their paperwork and Molotov cocktails to try and even score. I don't think that ends well in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I think you're right, Mike, because, you think in the cigar world, you can do co-opetition all you want because guys smoke 5-6 cigars a day, so...
Right.
You can have that sort of relationship, but like this, there's just like two trade shows. That's it. So, there's going to come a point, where it's us or them. And you're right. I think at some point that kind of ends.
Do you think the manufacturers and brand owners that have the intention of releasing something at TPE in January are now going to hold off releasing those products till the TPE move back in, what is it, May or June of this year? I mean, you're talking about companies that operate on quarterly basis and numbers, right? So, you're essentially telling them they're going to take a hit. We all know that what's new sells, right? People, it reinvigorates life into the brand as a whole in this industry. As much as that sucks, it's just true. So, do you think that they'll say, we're going to hold off until TPE, or they go ahead and release that product anyways in Q1?
I think, my opinion, that most of the stuff that was announced at TPE was a little fluff. It was or smaller releases or line extensions. So there were not anything major that went on at TPE. There was a few, but there wasn't anything major. So the answer is I think they hold. Now they say, you know what, we can hold back till May and really do a launch now of some of this stuff.
But you don't think it cannibalizes what they had intentions for and with the PCA?
That's going to depend if they plan on going to PCA. I think some, what I think is going to happen is this is my opinion. I think the companies that are going to take advantage of TPE and the one they're going to move their stuff up. They'll try to, and with COVID, with some stuff being pushed back, I think they'll have the opportunity to do that. Now Drew Estate, I think they're doing handstands right now, right? Because now they have a summer trade show. Or just before the summer. Maybe they'll move it up a couple months. But they have now a forum where, you know, really in January, their recycle is always the summer. Now they're like, well, we don't really need the PCA. We're invested heavily in TPE. We're just going to go pedal the metal at TPE.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, Mike, you're in a different spot because of where you're at in the country in regards to the retail side. So you don't necessarily have like a winter season and a summer season where you have, you know, have a slow thing. But if you talk to other retailers, like if they had an opportunity to buy in May and maybe start getting stuff into the shop, you know, in June ahead of that summer selling season, would they see that as an advantage rather than having to be out of the store in July and not receive product until August, September?
I think you're 100% correct. I think that they will take that and they will say, okay, May makes sense. You know, when you call, I know that when I call the retailers that I work with and say, hey, are you coming out to PCA? I don't know, a significant number of them say, I'm not leaving during busy season. I'm not, no way. I'm never, you know, I'm not getting out of my store needs me here. I need to boots on the ground, put in the work so, you know, I can keep this thing afloat, right? I mean, a lot of these retailers, they're not killing it, you know. We know the guys that absolutely crush it in this industry. And, you know, there's probably five of them. And then everybody else makes a good living, or at least some of them make a good living. And then a lot of them, I would say, pay their bills, right? A to B, B to C type stuff. Not, you know, no one's getting a new Maserati or anything like that. And those guys, they can't leave their shop. Especially when it comes to summertime. So yeah, I mean, May would probably make more sense, especially if it's more affordable. I mean, the hotel stays more affordable. It could be even more advantageous for TPE to hit it in that particular month. So.
Yeah.
And the other thing to take into consideration is now TPE is after TAA. So do they do some additional kind of work in regards to try to lure, you know, that some of those TAA dollars a few months later rather than them having a shot before TAA happens.
So when is TAA going?
Usually March, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have these, you know, 2 month gaps between these shows. Not, and, you know, TAA is definitely a smaller show in regards to who participates, but
like all the megalodons get together.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And you know, that's not your standard mom and pop shop, right? So I don't really think that that's going to have an effect either way, you know, because those guys, I don't know. I mean, some of them were at TPE just to kind of look, yeah. You know, and they obviously have their alliances, you know, they're going to back TAA and then some of them back TAA and PCA and they feel like TPE is a threat. So I don't think that that's where TPE is going to make their bread and butter anyways, right? They're going to make their bread and butter on getting the middle-of-the-line retailer that's, you know, making a decent living to come out and really kind of take advantage of them. Not so much – I mean, they're going to pull from PCA customers. They're not going to pull from TAA is kind of what I'm saying, you know? So.
Plus, Mike, you made a good point earlier. They have a nice setup because they have all the non-traditional product there. So they're not as reliant on just premium cigar folks.
Right. I think the PCA made a huge misstep when it went to the vape stuff.
So you know? Do I. Yeah, I totally do. Yeah.
They had that opportunity. They took those guys. They shoved them in the corner. They lost all those guys, took it right on the chin. They lost a ton of money. I mean, there's a guy that, I really like in the industry. He was a bigger deal in the past, and he kind of got out of it. A sweetheart of a dude, and he started doing the vape thing when it was like right at the beginning. And he was IPCPR 110%. So when it came to vaping, he's like, I'm gonna promote it at this convention. Well, they were treated like the redhead stepchild of the industry. So they all took it on the chin. They all lost a ton of money. If you had those people and you had, more space and you took in more income, maybe you could reduce more costs and incentivize more people to come out. That was a huge misstep, And now CBD is well more acceptable than any of it at this point. I mean, not only are we, does it cure everything apparently on the planet? It's the snake oil of the century. Athletes are all about it, so now it's not just your standard guy, your middle-aged Xbox player who wants to just chill, people are giving it to pets that get upset about lightning. I mean, it's everywhere. It's on everything. And, I feel like that kind of got snubbed too. It was like, we're going to focus on cigars. And damn, man, now you're in a position where, is this the final nail in the coffin? And I hope it's not. And I'm not rooting for the NPCA whatsoever. I could tell you, I remember the first day I went into IPCPR, I felt like I was way over my head, man. You walk in there and just, it's huge, right? I don't know how you guys felt about the first time you were there. I'm like, damn, this is gigantic. And the boost that these people built, and I remember seeing the Grey Cliff friggin' chandelier and shit like that. I'm like, oh my god, what industry am I in? This is insane. And I'll miss a lot of that stuff, and a lot of the relationships that were built because of IPCPR and PCA.
So. The one thing, Ben, I think you may remember this the most, Aaron and Eric, you may as well. The problem I remember with the vape people being at the IPCPR wasn't so much that they were there, but they kind of used very different tactics to kind of get – they used like the flea market tactics where they kind of pull you in off the aisle very aggressively, and that's where I heard a lot of the complaints about them. I mean, there were some people complaining about – the vape itself, but not as much as I remember. That was the big complaint. I remember if you go back to Vegas 2013-14, I was hearing those complaints over and over again, how people, it was just, they use very, the premium cigar industry doesn't operate like that, so it was very different. That was the complaint I remember, and I think that ultimately is why they pushed the vapes to the side the way they did.
That's true, Coop, but TPE handled that perfectly.
You're right. Yeah,
they separated them out, and so if you didn't want to go into that zone, you just didn't go into that.
You stayed on the red or blue carpet. They came up with a very equitable. I don't know if IPCR could have. They could have figured something out with that. I think to your point, yeah.
I mean, but
they do it. Intertobac does the same thing. I don't know how many of y'all been to Intertobac, but they have all the different halls there in Dortmund, and they got anything you could think of, all kinds of shit. That shit. But each hall, there's different stuff in different halls. So if you didn't want to deal with hookahs or, pot pipes or whatever, you just didn't go over there, So they handled it the same way. They've been doing it for way longer than any of them. So it's all, it could be done. They just missed it. I agree with Mike.
Can we talk about the fact that we're talking about grown-ass men complaining about people approaching them? I mean, that's kind of a big deal.
And usually they were pretty attractive women that were doing it.
Yeah.
So
do you remember, again, you guys remember going back to 2011 and 12 when all the models were there? I mean, with cigar companies too. I remember Casada would always hire someone to work the front of the booth to come in. It was usually a model or someone like that.
Yeah.
You don't see that anymore as much.
I just don't think that it was ever advantageous.
Yes, I think you're right. I think you're right on that. Yeah.
The people that are really there to do business don't give a shit. It's like, hey, okay, where's the sales rep? Thanks. So the only thing that you're attracting at that point is, you know, some really lonely guy who probably can't buy anything anyways. And, you know, that person's just sucking up that girl's time, right? So, like, yeah, I mean, that stuff never made sense. I just don't understand the concept of, you know, who would go and complain about anybody approaching them, whether it's a model or just a standard sales rep. And, you know, what, you can't just tell them no. Hey, man, I'm good. You know, I don't sell that stuff. Sorry. You know, like, you got to go run to the board. Hey, they're trying to get me to buy stuff. You know?
Yeah, like whining is something new in this industry.
I think there was something though. I'm trying to change it, you know? I think ultimately the decision came to was because there was this they were trying to do the separation from of premium cigars from that. I think there was a clear they wanted the PC IPCR at the time wanted to separate from that because that's what they were. That was the whole legal battle
right.
at the time. So I think there was a lot of that went into it too. But you can't argue it was still a revenue producer. You want to know why there's less people? That was a reason. You right. took away a part of the business there.
Right, and you know those guys that are focusing on vape shops, you know. You give the right that right guy the cigar that they love, and boom, now you got another cigar smoker, right?
Yeah.
And they become fans. They start building their own product and, you know, producing their own, you know, whether it be even in that shop or they open up a second shop that's solely cigars or premium cigars. You know, maybe they realize the vape stuff isn't for them. They want to, you know, they want to get into premium cigars. Like, where is the avenue to transition a non-cigar smoker into a cigar guy via that whole convention, right? Where's that potential? And, you know, that potential is kind of where all that's interlaced, at least in my opinion. You know, I know plenty of guys that do all the other stuff that also like cigars, you know?
But I've seen it also go the other way. I have several friends of mine that don't smoke when the vape was getting kind of hot. They basically would smoke a cigar because they said the vape was so much cheaper. So they right. just went away from that. I mean, so there's that element too. I don't know. I don't really know anybody that I know of that had vape and went to cigars, you know. I mean, but you do have – that is a good point, though, because like our shop in Biloxi, we have a lot of young – you know, the airmen at the Air Force Base or they come for training. And they'll come in, and they're looking for flavored cigars, right? Right. And I see that as a huge bridge. They go from that, and they're like, "Oh, what are you guys smoking? Oh, this is Padron or a Roma Craft or whatever, you know?" They're like, "Oh, I'm gonna try that next time." By the end of their time, they're there. They're smoking premium cigars now, you know. So there is that bridge factor that maybe vapes did do that, you know, or can do that back in the day.
I did talk to some people the last day at TPA. And they said that they were people who were maybe buying on the alternative product side that were coming over and were very interested in premium cigar things.
Right.
So there was some of that was definitely, I heard it from enough people where there was interest. I'm not saying they racked up a lot of sales,
right.
but I did hear it. And you know, from several manufacturers that they started to see that traffic, which is, it was interesting because like the last couple hours of TPE, it was not a ghost town at all on the cigar, at least on the cigar side. In fact, I think on the vape side, it was more of a ghost town.
Right.
It was because I saw a lot more traffic on the cigar side those final 2 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, if you, with this, with a pandemic happening, if you look at a bunch of the cigar retailers, how many of them would have loved to have gone to TPE now and kind of wandered on the other side of the carpet and looked at some of those products and brought those into their store so that they could, you know, not be struggling during these times where they're trying to rely on, you know, curbside delivery of cigars and have a much broader base of people that they could sell CBD and vape stuff to.
Yeah.
That's a valid point. I think the bigger issue for smaller retailers and where a lot of those guys are suffering is the fact that, you know, a lot of them don't have online setups. Mm-hmm. You know, when this thing hit, it was an instant uptick online. You're like, what the hell? Where are these people coming from? Right. And it became so much to a point where I saw a lot of local names for my shop and they just would say, hey, just ship it to me, you know, whatever. I can't hang out at the shop and, you know, I still want to smoke my cigars. Like, So for me, like if you had that avenue set up as a, even as a smaller retailer, you didn't have to put every product out there. You know, you could look at your top 10 SKUs, right? And have those accessible. And I think that even on a local level, you would have continued to have that support, you know? But yeah, you're 100% correct, man. If you had another avenue of revenue in this time, you definitely needed it, and you definitely needed to capitalize on it, for sure. So snubbing those things in the past, you know, might have been a big mistake.
Yeah, you're right about the online sales too, because I know several shops that had online setups already going, and when they all got shut down, actually their sales increased.
Right.
Over normal sales that they had in normal times. It was incredible. It was kind of cool to see, but you're right. If they had online systems, their sales skyrocketed. I mean, it was probably from people that, you know, their cigar shops don't have it, so they got to go to somewhere else to do it. So people that did it, they stole sales from other shops because they couldn't be open. They had no online system.
Right.
That's a great point.
Plus an increase in smoking, right? I mean, you're stuck at home. You know, you got to work all the time, which, corporations got to be loving this. You want to have that escape. You still need to give your spouse space. You know, you need a few minutes to yourself away from the kids. So, but maybe you don't want to get drunk every day, right? So if you go outside, you know, you have a small cigar, you get kind of a break of the monotony in the work. Like, it made sense. So, you know, you saw guys that were experimenting with cigars, you know, that have never done that before. So there were opportunities to even build that clientele base from your shop that would now be online, right? So huge opportunities were missed for some of these guys. And, you know, I feel for them, you know.
Aaron, did you hear that? He said you shouldn't be sitting around getting drunk all day.
I didn't say that.
But I thought he was talking about you.
Not everybody wants to get drunk every day. I mean, you do whatever you want, Aaron. Don't let Eric go.
Don't worry. I'm doing it. It's okay. I mean, Eric's got a bottle of bourbon next to him, I'm sure.
I'm sure I do. Guilty.
Right.
It's close enough.
You know, yeah. We're talking about, you know, I saw some retailers actually who, like, last minute tried to put up online stores. Mm-hmm. I don't know how successful though. I mean, it was actually like they didn't have enough product on there. It was clear they were only putting a few pieces of inventory on. They were trying anything, and I think if they had it over to do it over again, next time, like, they'll be ready to have an online store, because that definitely hurt them this last time around. Not being prepared with that.
Well, it's always better off to be ready for the opportunity, right, than the other way around.
Yeah.
You know? Well, that's kind of brings me back to my point of TPE and those other stores, right? You know, and like you said, they're not going to come around at the end of the show and it's going to be a gangbusters order, but maybe you turn a couple guys into some serious cigar smokers, right?
Yep. Yeah.
People that believe in this industry, the better odds we have in surviving, right? So why would you snub those? Why would you snub anybody? You know, it's kind of my point.
Yeah. Do you guys think that now, kind of going back to this whole PCA versus TPA, do you think the PCA trade show needs to make radical changes right now to counter this? Like, they're going to have some serious competition 10 weeks beforehand. And I'm not just talking about manufacturers showing up at the show. I'm talking about retailers. Because retailers, I think, are they going to double dip? Is the second question I have on that.
I think they put themselves in a bad spot, Coop, because if they do make radical changes, then it's going to look like they're scrambling, you know? And if they don't make radical changes, people are going to say they failed to adjust to the market. And so they burnt a bridge a little bit with the whole consumer day and then canceling that, because that was like a radical change. And so when they canceled that, now if they do another radical change now, people are going to say, well, you know, they screwed up the last one, they'll probably screw up this one. Like, I don't know. Like, I think they put themselves in a bit of a rough spot.
I agree. I completely agree. And this is now month three of the furlough. And there's only two people working at the PCA offices right now.
Words out of my mouth.
So what are you going to, even if you wanted to do something, I don't see how you're going to do it. You have no staff. This is the third. Now you're in the third month of a furlough. This is, you know, this is something that was supposed to be a short term thing. And now we're into September and there's, I don't know when, if something changes or not.
So does PCA turn from a industry organization with a trade show to just a legislative lobby kind of a thing?
Oh. My questions to them, like without a trade show, there's no, like, there's really no support. I mean, I asked if they could, there could just be like, could there be just an entity that, you know, fought regulation and would they get support from the industry? And many people just said, really said, no, there's not enough interest in that. Like the trade show is what drives the income to this organization. And without that, you know, some people would probably support it. But you know, they're going to, most other people would just take it as money back in their pocket. I would assume.
For sure.
Yeah. Does, are both trade shows hurting each other by being this close together now? Does, like, you know, does this hurt both trade shows or does it help? You know, I think we've answered a lot of it already, but I don't think it's good that they're both competing, although I think TPE is going to have the edge here.
So TPD definitely has the upper hand in this. I mean, they had the big momentum coming in anyway, and just moving it to, you know, the time they got now, it just makes it even better for them. You know, so and like Mike was saying too, like the especially in Florida, your hottest months, you know, June, July, and August, right? Nobody, I mean, that's why you'll see so many people coming to the trade show, but they're there for like a day and a half, maybe two, and they're gone. They jet out if they come, you know. And I know a lot of it's because like they have shops in special areas that where they have a lot of tourists coming in, they need to be there. You know, so having it when they do, coming with momentum, TBE has a major advantage over PCA. Plus, PCA had to do, they needed to do a lot of work way before TBE started stealing all their people.
And TBE, Ben, that's a good point, but TBE is going to have a huge edge where, okay, you're going to have fall, you're going to have orders coming in for Memorial Day, Father's Day, 4th of July, before even PCA opens their doors. So there's, and that's why I don't know how many retailers, I think more retailers may go to place show orders this year at TPE, and it's going to be a big question mark what happens at PCA. Did it, because go back to Vegas 10 weeks later to do what? Do the same orders? Or yeah, is it going to be something radically different? Yeah.
Yeah, and on top of that, too, like you were saying, too, if manufacturers start releasing cigars much earlier in the year because of TPE, they're getting their products in a lot sooner. They're actually probably will get products in during their peak months instead of getting them in October, November.
Right.
Where in some areas, they're not, their sales are sharply starting to decline because of winter, or the tourists aren't coming to that area. You know, like where I was at in Florida, especially where Mike's at, you know, we're close. So, you know, the tourists are starting to, they're, you know, kids are going back to school. So they're not taking vacations. They're not in the area. They're going to the beaches. They're gone. They're left. So now your sales have declined a lot. Or in other areas where it's starting to get really cold and snowing, you know, it starts having to decline too. So now you get orders in much sooner. You would think, I don't know, you would get it in much sooner. So you're getting your product in during your peak sale time. That's a major advantage right there. A huge one.
Yeah.
It's a major advantage for TPE. It's not, does it hurt one or the other? It's who's going to get hurt and who's going to have an increase, you know? And I think that, you know, everybody knows there's blood in the water, you know, and you're right. There's two people in an office. How do you adapt? How do you make those strategic moves with just two?
You can't. It's just, yeah. I mean, there's just, like I said, Nate, you know, there's things going on, I'm sure, on an administrative front they're dealing with, and, you know, obviously legislative, but I'm sure there's just – I don't see how you don't have to create – you know, I'm not going to – the creative juices aren't even there now. I mean, you can argue – I know it's always debate, you know, how good a job it, but there's no one there right now unless people are going to do it for free. But I can't see employees now on a third month of a furlough, you know, like kind of continuing to kind of do free work. That's kind of where I, you know, 3 months is a long time to be out of work.
Hey, Coop, just on a slightly different note, same topic, different note. What about from a like a media perspective?
That was actually the next thing, Eric. Perfect, okay. Perfect question. Yeah, that was a perfect segue. That was like the last point I wanted to make on this. Go ahead, take it.
You know, I can imagine. You know, we cover TPE, which we did last year, and we did interviews with everybody that was there, and that's what we do at PCA. But now, when they're a couple months apart, I guess we would do it anyways. I really haven't thought about it. But just assuming that both shows happened, like just for sake of argument, both shows happen. Like if for us, it's going to be odd, like covering all these same guys a month later with the same video interview, essentially. And nothing, very little probably has changed between those two, you know, time frames.
Oh, totally. Unless it's just people at PCA for some reason. Like, there's a group of PCA people I don't think will be at TPA. But it's and minus the big four, by the way. You know, or three of the big, you know, because General Altidus and Davidoff don't play a big role at TPA. And it's just, they don't play. So, but Ben, you're in the same boat too. I mean, you've done video coverage for over 15 years with this right now. How does that affect someone like you now? It's two trade shows now you have to deal with.
I mean, I'm not sure we could actually have the funds to cover two trade shows. I'll see how we can do it.
It's very hard.
Yeah, I don't know. We'd have to figure that out when time comes, I guess. But I don't see us being able to cover two. You know, like Eric was saying, you cover one, you're basically going to just be covering the same stuff again at the other one probably. You know, I mean, minus one or two probably new things or, you know, manufacturer will hold back just for PCA or TPE or whichever one, you know. But I don't know. That's a difficult one. We hadn't discussed that yet, but
well, Texas is close.
I don't think it.
Vegas. I mean, you could drive and you could just stay in a van. Both.
I mean, I could, but I won't.
It's. I mean, right now, I guess what I'm doing is I'm planning on going to both, but it's going to chip my coverage model. I think it's going to be very different because I think it's going to be like a split, and it's just I'm going to see what the overlap is, but I will go to both, but it does change a lot of things. Mm-hmm. It's going to change like things we deal with, like press release cycles and things like that. Cause I think the press release cycles will now start like late April. Maybe we won't get that big crush like we get in the last 2 weeks of June. I think that will be, but I don't know. I'm going to have to figure that out. And I was planning on taking a third person this year, and I don't know if I take the third person. Originally, I was going to take the third person to PCA. Now, do I take them to TPE instead? I got to figure out I got to see what this is going to, how this is going to flesh out.
Let me ask you, do you think it's possible for like some level of a merger by any chance?
No.
Never going to happen.
Never going to happen because it's a PCA is not for profit and TPE is for profit. I don't see it happening. And the question is, and the other scenario is, well, does TPE like outsource it, right? I think it's going to be more costly for them to do that. I mean, that's an option they have right now without staff, is they can outsource the show. I think that would be a big mistake because I think if you bring in someone who doesn't know the industry to do this, it's going to be a problem. And I don't think they'll outsource it to TPE.
Okay.
I don't know. That's just my opinion. I don't know if anyone else has a different opinion on that.
Yeah,
I've heard the merger scenario floated by a lot of people, though.
I can't imagine that happening. But stranger things have happened. Who knows?
Yeah. All right. Anything else we want to talk about with this PCA-TP? I know we could do probably several shows on it. All right. All right. Let's go to our second topic. And I want to talk about 2020 in cigars. And Aaron, you kind of started talking about this with Sokka, and I was kind of glad you did when you got on. So I'll let you kind of recap a little of the Sokka discussion, and I think that's a good lead-in, if you don't mind.
Yeah, Sokka brought up the point that, you know, he wasn't seeing a big buzz about new cigars this year. You know, because no trade show kind of thing, and just on social media, like, you know, new releases, he didn't see really getting a big push. I kind of made the point, you know, there's no trade show, so obviously, you know, typically in end of June through July, you have a ton of coverage. You have a bunch of press releases coming out, announcements going on, And then during the trade show, you have, you know, 4 days of like nonstop kind of video coverage. You know, Eric's putting out live stuff. Ben's got stuff coming out after the show. So you got this like month long thing of just like constant videos where you can get all the scoop on all the new stuff and things like that. And we just didn't have that this year. And I also chimed in that I thought this was just kind of a continuation of 2019 in regards to like the quality of the cigars. Like this is just my opinions. I haven't felt that, you know, there's a bunch of, you know, standout fantastic cigars that have been released so far this year. You know, there's a couple standouts that happened, but for the most part, it's kind of like, to me, it's middle of the road stuff that was still happening in 2019. Partly maybe some of that's because, you know, lower production and things like that due to the coronavirus and stuff like that. But part of it's just like the continuation of like just average blends that are out there. So you can kind of go from there as to what you want to talk about. But that's kind of how we touched on the subject earlier.
Okay. You want me to go?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that here's what you're going to see. I think that you're going to see an evolution from the brand owners and manufacturers level as far as their own levels of promotion. The fact of the matter is that, you know, typing something together and making a press release just isn't enough, right? Yep. And it needs to be more captivating. And, you know, the guys that are going to outshine are, you're not going to be surprised who they are, right? Because they're already good at what they do as far as marketing. They already have that technique down. They just haven't figured out how to turn it with what's going on currently. I think that there have been a couple of good news cigars that have come out, you know?
Flyers win!
Coop, I was waiting for you to do that.
I'm a little delay. Sorry, Mike. Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
There's been a lot of great new cigars. You can see the level of excitement.
Mike just goes on. It's like,
you know. But, you know, I think that, you know, I think that HVC came out with some good stuff. I think that, you know, things that pop in my head instinctively. I think that Brulé Blue was ridiculous, you know. Unstolen Valor was this year too, no?
Yeah. And Sokka was saying, I heard this, for him, this was kind of a down year in a way. Not that he was doing bad stuff, but he wasn't introducing a new brand this year, really.
Yeah, and I think there was a few months there that nobody knew what to expect, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I can tell you from a retail standpoint, March and April, I wasn't buying shit. You know, it wasn't happening. I didn't know, you know, my brother is my partner, and, you know, we sat down and we said, hey, look, okay, if we have to close and we can't sell anything, how long can we sustain with continuing to pay our employees, right? What are the right moves that we need to do now in order to propel them, and how far can we take care of them, right? That was our outlook. So when the phone call came, hey, you know, I just want to check in, see how things are going. I said, hey, listen, I love you, but I'm not buying anything right now. I'm going to dwindle down my inventory. I'm going to make sure that, you know, the people that have always looked after me are good, that you know, that was a very important to us. And we're going to kind of go from there. So you had 60 days, maybe even 90 days for some retailers where there wasn't a lot of buying. So I can understand Sokka's point is saying, well, there wasn't, you know, there was some impact there. However, the tail end of that was astronomical, right? Because now it played out, especially for guys like me, that I mean, you were selling a lot of stuff, a lot of product. So now you have to anticipate that growth. So now you didn't buy before. So, you know, your numbers as far as your consumption and purchasing jumps up significantly, you know. So I think that offsets as far as what was slow. You know, Nick Melillo's dropping that new Wei Wensei. I don't know how it's called, the Perfecto, but, I mean, the pig Wei Wensei. You know, and people are lit up about it, right? People are excited about it. So I don't think that that's entirely true. I think that, you know, people are definitely excited about some newer stuff that's going on. The difference is that it's all not clumped together in one particular month where there's a ton of coverage, you know? So you're going to see those brand owners that learn how to kind of develop their own marketing skills or already have their marketing skills, tweak it so that it's better. And, you know, they'll give you guys better content, which I think is going to be even better for you guys. you know? I mean, I get some of the videos that Coop has done, like, you take a lot of time in some of the stuff that you do, right? Mm-hmm. Like, even with the Hey, What's New thing, and, I mean, don't get me wrong, it was brutal. You guys thought I was going to give up. I wasn't there, but I was just in the background.
Oh, we would have not blamed you. We kept you waiting.
You know, but, like, I understood it. Like, you know, there are parlays. And there are some guys that, I mean, I'm just like, come on, man. You know, let's hurry it up a little. You know, you hear the Oscar music. We're moving on. You'd like to thank the Academy. But then you turn around and you took all that content and you broke it down into significant portions and you used it for, you know, other releases. Like, you took, hey, this is what this guy said, right? And boom, here was instant access to that clip. Like that thought process is significant, right? And when those guys don't just solely rely on you recording them talking in the background and they give you video content that's, you know, viable, it's going to benefit their brand. It's going to benefit news outsources. You know, it's going to be good. So the real question is going to be, is that going to hurt PCA even more? You know, because it will.
Good point.
No. So what happened to the hockey game? Somebody won.
The Flyers won. The Flyers have won. We are going to game 7.
Let me just say, the fact that you're like, hey, I'm just good to where they're at, it's complete horseshit.
Yeah.
Listen, the Islanders are tough. I was very – they knocked out Washington really easy.
I'm okay with you saying that. I'm not okay with you saying, hey, it was a good run. Like, that's
we've been horrible for a few years, the Flyers. You got to say – You know, there's always a playoffs let me down with the Flyers, so it's I'm used to it.
You gotta say this is our year. I believe that you're the guy that bets on the team at the beginning of the year every single year. Like, this is the year. The season starts to play out, becomes kind of horseshit, and you're like, well, we made playoffs.
I take the Steve Soccer approach with sports. I don't know. We're not gonna do really good this year. You know. Who's gonna pay any? You know,
there's no Brady.
Yeah, you know that's you know, who's gonna smoke STFUs? You know, who's gonna buy them? You know,
yeah.
Oh no, but I actually, and it was interesting. Yeah, that was exactly what I had to come up with a different strategy. What I did to cover things this year with the new releases, so I kind of just had to think a little out of the box. It actually paid off pretty well, I'll say that. So I'm happy with that, but it was different.
We all had to adapt to some degree.
But there was no – here's what the thing, and this is where I'll kind of agree kind of with that. A lot of companies held back on a major release this year. I mean, there's a handful that did, but there's not a lot that did major releases this year. Like, is there a brand that anyone could think of? I mean, one that comes to mind, EP Carrillo with the Pledge, but they don't do a lot of releases historically anyway. I mean, there wasn't that big, like, release that everyone was kind of circling around to talk about this year. Like,
I don't know. That Dojo Dogma seemed to be the big release of the year, baby.
There it is.
Okay. From what I'm hearing, Deadwood is just – the Deadwood release has been incredible, too.
Coop, stop changing the subject.
Well, the Dojo release hasn't hit the stores yet. It hasn't hit the stores yet.
I'm teasing.
Okay. No, I mean, but okay, fair enough, Eric. You were like, and that was one of the signature releases of Drew Estate this year. But even with Drew Estate, they didn't introduce a new brand this year.
Well, doesn't the Leather Rose qualify? I mean, the Acid One, wasn't that something? I don't know.
They were extensions, technically. I mean, you could argue it was a new blend, but they weren't like you know, they were. It was a smart move by Drew Estate because they had come out with a lot of new brands in previous years. So I think if they were going to kind of this year to keep introducing brands for the sake of introducing brands, I understand it. But it just, I don't know, something seemed to be missing this year that we've seen in previous years. Like, is there one line that's just, you know, Nick Merlello's is kind of, that's going to be an interesting one, but it's technically another extension of LY Wednesday.
So what came out last year that you were like, yes, I know it was Placencia for Eric, but what was it for you guys that you were like?
The big ones last year were Brulé, Baca. What are some of the other ones? Those two were really big.
Baca was big
release, yeah.
Yeah, Baca was a major release. You got to look at that. That, you know, you can't argue. That was a very hot cigar too. You know, everyone was you know, gunning for that cigar at the trade show. You know, who's a Romacraft customer,
right?
But I mean, I look at like Drew Estate brought back the BOTL last year. They big year for Acid, so it was the anniversary year. So I kind of get that. But last year we started to also see this downturn too, though. In fact, we were mentioning, like, a lot of people were worried about FDA now, and you know, so that played a lot into it.
Yeah.
The you know, so I kind of, I don't know, I kind of looked at it and I was like, I thought it was kind of, like I said, it was I thought it was interesting right now. But I mean, is there, I'll ask you guys, from, you know, how would you, from the manufacturing standpoint, do you guys, were there other releases that you've seen come out in the last few months, you know, that were, wow, they had a wow factor? And I'm not talking like the Baca line extensions, which were technically introduced last year.
I mean, I think the hot cake was pretty banging, you know.
It's a small brand. He's just still a small brand. I get it. It was a good cigar, yeah.
You know, but like, I guess I just don't go for a lot of the mainstream stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like for me, like I, you know, when you guys are talking about the big release, like a brand that had a big release, the only thing that pops in my head in like the course of the past 5 years that I thought was actually wound up being a disappointment was the Padron, right? The Connecticut Shade.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a total shit show.
Right. Terrible. You know, like they finally came out with something new. Like that was epic. I, you know, Fuente hasn't done that. Not that really pops in my head. You know, I mean, so I don't personally think that it happens a lot. I don't think that it happens as much as you think. And you're right, with substantial equivalency and the way that this market has been going over the past 5 years, like people are always going to be hesitant to some degree. Some guys are just like, screw it, you know, but some of these guys weren't, you know, trying to figure out how to navigate it. But I still think there's some new stuff that comes out that's super intriguing, you know?
Let me ask, I'll kind of turn this to, you know, I told you all you guys actually. Is there a cigar that's standing out that's like the front runner for cigar of the year right now, even?
Yeah, baby.
The dog, but it's not dojo eligible.
You know what? No, it's not. But you know what's weird, Coop, is like it right. Seems like last year that we had the same conversation, you know?
We did. Yeah, we did.
But then by the end of the year, when it was all said and done, there was a lot of good stuff. So I don't know, like I think it's the jury's out. Like there's been some good ones. If you get three or four good ones and you fill in the rest, you know, it could be a decent year. I get your point though. I mean, you're not wrong. Your point is right. Just the way this year has gone with COVID and everything else, like there's just so many factors working against this year. But when January comes around, December comes around, and we start putting our lists together, I think it'll be a decent list. It might not be the list of 2 years ago or whatever, but it just always seems to surprise me at the end when we, you know, actually start tabulating.
That's a fair point.
Grounded has Mil Diaz coming out, right? That's new.
Yep.
That is a new one. Yeah, I mean the Perdomos have done well, but those Perdomos were originally supposed to come out earlier in the year. By the way, they weren't planned for trade show. They were planned much earlier than before the trade show. They've sold really well. I mean, the one, you know what cigar has kind of surprised a lot of, this has surprised me, and I'm not saying it's the cigar of the year, but it's kind of become the one that's sold out really quick, is that Aganorsa Leaf Supreme Leaf, which they've sold out of, like, they did a 500 box run of TP, they sold it out, and it sold off the shelves. Then they did 1,500 boxes of a Toro size, three times the amount, and the same thing happened. So that's a cigar that's kind of like it's moved, and it's sold at both. They sold out the inventory, and then the retailers basically sold out most of the allotment they got.
Yeah, that's one I haven't been able to get my hands on because everywhere I've contacted, it's gone immediately.
Yeah.
Terrence told me and Seth where to go buy that cigar, and they were sold out. Like – we called him like both immediately back to back, and it was kind of funny. And because Seth called first, and then I called an hour later, and he said, "Hey, what are you guys tag teaming?" They go, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Oh, Seth just called trying to get it too." I said, "Well, Terrence told us to call you guys." So, yeah, that's what happened with that. So that's one. That was a surprise because I haven't heard of an Aganor Solis cigar selling, and they've done 1,500 box runs that haven't sold that fast before.
Somebody already mentioned the Silver Mesa Blue, of course, and that's another one that I think everybody's excited about. I know I just smoked the first one the other day. It was really good.
Yep.
I was impressed with the Aladino Cameroon.
The Aladino Cameroon is really good.
I can't wait to try that one. I haven't had it yet.
Yeah, but I'll say a lot of the cigars that are ranking high on my list this year are last year releases. So that's kind of where my list is a little different. Not that there's not 2020 stuff that's been, you know, like I said, there's some stuff out there for sure. Do you think how do you feel like maybe from as a retailer, Mike, have you been kind of satisfied with maybe what's been made? Like you think there's enough available to kind of keep your, you know, keep things fresh and new there at your store?
Yeah, I think so. I believe that you. There's only so much shelf space, right? And you hit your wagon to the guys that you believe in.
Yep.
And, you know, obviously for those guys, that's obviously Skip and Mike.
Yep.
You know, without question. I mean, that's obvious. But, you know, Saka has been full force. And he's doing well, you know, in the stories. He's a creative marketer. He's got good product. And, you know, you have to throw Terrence in that conversation. Terrence is... I mean, how fortunate was it for Aganorsa to take on Terrence? I mean, in my opinion, I just think that he's, you know, it's a company that's had great tobacco for years. You know, you've seen guys like Dion and Nick go in there and really capitalize on that stuff. But, you know, you never really saw them shine as their own brand. And with Terrence at the helm of that, all of a sudden, you know, there's a significant emergence of that. And to a point where I see guys coming in specifically asking for it, you know, that never happened. You know, that doesn't happen with Fonseca or, you know, definitely doesn't happen with Quesada, you know. So like those guys are you know, the guys that you want to back and you kind of hit your wagon to as far as a retailer's aspect is concerned, you know, Espinosa too, you know, they're coming out. They came out with some stuff. They've been doing some work, and they got a hell of a team. You know, I got a lot of respect for Jack and Hector, and
oh yeah,
Eric had some health conditions too prior to that, so that kind of slowed him down. And I still think that they're doing pretty good. You know, so yeah, as far as a retailer's concerned, and as far as seeing new product and still seeing availability of regular products, I think that the job has been harder for a lot of people, but you know. This is where you start to see a separation. You start to see the guys that are going to succeed really well in this industry and the guys that are just going to be mediocre. Okay.
I'll turn the question around now to quality of releases this year. And I know we had this conversation. This was a debate conversation a bunch of us had last year in terms of the quality of these releases. And I noticed some that have been standouts, but overall, do you feel that the quality of the releases is kind of what you've expected this year? Or is it slightly down, or is it kind of maintained? I think a lot of us feel there was a dip last year. And this year has flatlined. It got worse or better.
Come on, Eric. Come on, Ben. Game's over. Let's go.
I mean, I feel like it's the same as last year.
I don't think there's
been an improvement. I don't think it's dropped down. I think it's still kind of maintaining that trajectory that last year had, or was kind of a bit of a dip down,
yeah,
kind of in that middle ground area.
Right. This is, yeah, that's kind of what I feel.
Ben?
I wasn't really going to talk about it much because honestly, with this move and all the stuff going on this year for me, I haven't really smoked a ton of the new stuff coming out, you know? So, I mean, probably the best thing I've had this year do is come out was that Davidoff Special 53. I mean, that was really damn good. But like the, you know, the new Aganorsa, you know, the new, shit, we just mentioned it. Oh, fuck, now it slipped my mind again. But yeah, I haven't been, the Cameroon, the Aladino Cameroon. Like, I love the Aladino line. I mean, it's fantastic. The Crow line is amazing. But I haven't been able, I haven't seen that anywhere. So I really want to try that one too. So I haven't had much this year just because, you know, just been so busy. But
yeah, the good news is you're in a pretty good market right now for cigars. Like, you're going to see, like, you get a lot of releases that hit that market, like, early.
Yeah, I got, like, literally about 20 cigar shops less than 15 minutes from my house.
Yeah, that's a...
I've never had that. Even when I was in Houston, in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Coop, there's no chance that we've just gotten...
Yeah, that's definitely a chance.
A little harder on product, maybe than
we have. I think we have. I think that's a fair point. We have a lot of us have gotten harder for our product. Not Aaron, but because
he doesn't like cigars.
I know we got a lot harder on the coupe end. Yes, on the coupe end, things have gotten harder. So I can say that. I haven't changed anything from last year criteria really. So. That's kind of, so I've seen a dip. The average score has gone down significantly this year on Coop, using kind of the same standard of criteria as that I introduced last year. So, but again, in fairness, a lot of that, like, I'm still reviewing a lot of 2019 stuff too. So, how that 20 stuff's gonna happen, I think is you know, a lot of it still hasn't hit the stores yet, or I haven't smoked it yet. So, I think that's a fair point.
Right.
Yeah, I think you're. I think
a lot of it hasn't. So. Yeah. Maybe in November, this conversation might go differently.
It may be very different. Yeah, when we get into end of year. Let's. I think we're in a good segue to the next conversation point, which is the third one I had, and this is a cigar shortage, right? Given there has been factory shutdowns in the Dominican and Honduras, I think Nicaragua's had. Limited. I think there's been some limitations in Nicaragua. I don't think it's been as bad. But are we in a cigar shortage already, guys?
I think so. I mean, just me personally, like my shop back in Tallahassee that I was at all the time, I kind of went through a lot of blends with the owner there, trying to pick out a new line. He has a line called Balakari, which I'm smoking one now. It's a messenger. And this one, we kind of picked this blend out from a bunch of stuff, and he's been trying, you know, tweaking it. And it took him a long time to get this out of Nicaragua. A long time. I mean, he had one batch and literally got out. It was like one of the last shipments out of Nicaragua before they shut everything down. Couldn't get nothing out. His factory he was using, they shut down for quite a while, you know. So, I mean, and I hear about backorders constantly backorder. You know, even Sokka's posted about it. Like he was having some issues for, you know, people were having issues for months. So yeah, I can see where, you know, there's a huge shortage now. But it seems like it's kind of starting to taper off now, or starting to ramp back up, and so starting to roll in now. So. It's getting a lot better, but yeah, that definitely was a moment there. You couldn't get nothing in at all. Nothing for months.
You know, it's possible, guys, that we may not have even hit the time frame where things get rough, because, you know, cigars are one of those products that, you know, age and sit around, and the ones that in March, April, you know, May, you know, those cigars were already made and that kind of thing. And so it's theoretically possible that in the winter or next spring, you know, that's when you could see, you know, the effects of the factory shutdowns and that kind of thing. Although I think now this is just some of the guys that I talked to that are smaller, but I think like the bigger companies probably won't see any sort of lull because they just have such a vast stock. But, you know, the smaller companies, you know, it's possible that, you know, next year could be rough because that's, the factories were closed when they were making the cigars that, you know, they would have maybe been putting out in the wintertime, you know, next year, that kind of thing. So we don't even know for sure if it's really affected us yet or not.
Personally, I think that you're just seeing a market correction. I think that we have had too many cigars being brought into this country for too many years. There were a lot of retailers that get easily duped into the, hey, if you spend $10,000 with us this month for the show, you're going to save 10% or 20% or whatever the case may be, you know, and they have been sitting on a lot of that product, you know, and some of them have had an opportunity to dwindle down some of that overstock that they haven't needed. I think that, you know, the production numbers now that might be coming out, maybe there's a little bit more of an uptick moving forward, but I think that that's probably where it should be. It's closer to the sweet spot than where it was with the overall production. I mean, as far as your boutique guys, you know, it's a tacky, you know, name or whatever, but you know, back orders are always going to exist, especially with guys like Skip and like Sokka and like Nick and, you know, Dion and Pete. Those guys, I think it's a lot of them, if they exceed their sales than they have anticipated. You know, you don't want to tell a retail shop no, you want to open them up. So, and sometimes you cannibalize yourself, you hurt the other retailers, right? Like, I think that that's more of a bigger issue, is exceeding your overall sales and volume than it is your overall quantities. And same, it kind of also brings you back to, you know, the mediocrity of cigars. You were upset. You're saying, hey, a lot of stuff that was coming out, you're not really impressed with, you know, because I think that a couple guys have made some stuff that are just like, whoa, what the hell is that? You know, how, this is amazing. And now that's your new comparable. Right. And that's happened over the course of the past 3 or 4 years. So because that's happened, that 20% has now taken the 80% that you would regularly consider a cigar that you would smoke. And you're like, I don't know, man, this cigar feels a little lighter. This cigar isn't that complex. You know, the wrapper isn't that thick. You can tell that it doesn't taste. The taste isn't as robust, you know, and I think that those brands might actually affect the ecosystem of the cigars as a whole, because your people aren't going to be consuming them as much, right? I think that's more what you're witnessing than an understock of inventory.
That's a very good point. You know,
great point, yeah.
It was something else. You're talking about the market correction too. Something I was kind of complained about, but it's like it seemed like cigar companies were just hard-pressed to get something out. Like I said, like monthly releases, constantly bring something new out. Constantly bring something new, and maybe this will help with that, where you don't need to bring something out one or two times a month. Slow down, and instead of having, like, you know, 12 new releases of the year that are kind of okay, maybe cut it back to 4 really good stuff, good things coming out, good blends. Maybe that's, I mean, that would be better, I would think, for everybody.
Yeah, you know, Ben, I remember going back to Eddie Ortega, right? And he kind of bursts on the scene hot. And then he does the Wild Bunch, which he had some good cigars in there, but there were some ones that probably weren't as good, and it was a cigar a month, and I think that ultimately really hurt him on his brand in the end. I don't think he ever recovered from that.
I agree.
Yeah.
I just don't want to take over the whole panel. I feel like I'm doing that. And, I'm trying to hold back here.
Oh, no, you're good.
You're doing good.
No. Yeah, no. Mike, you do you.
Yeah. The thing, you know, one thing I'll say is, you know, we were talking about quality, and this is where I'll say, and folks may have it, if you go back to the, you know, the shortage of the 90s, right? That's when you heard of bad tobacco, bad construction, right? I don't think we're seeing that part rear its ugly head right now. You know, you could say I don't like the cigar, but I don't think you're saying, hey, there's really shitty tobaccos that are being put in these cigars and there's really shitty construction.
No.
But I don't think we're having those types of impacts yet.
I don't think we will.
I don't think we will.
Yeah.
At least in the short term. I can't say what may happen in the future, but right now I'm not seeing it.
No. I agree more with what Mike said about how our bar has been raised because there's been so much really good stuff come out that where stuff, you know, I mean, I was started smoking cigars in the 90s. There was some true shit.
Yeah.
During that time. I mean, it was terrible shit. I don't see none of that now. Even the stuff we thought, like, it's okay. It's really good stuff still. But like Mike was saying, our bar now has been raised so much by some of the great stuff coming out
right.
that I kind of feel bad for cigar manufacturers. It's kind of like, I almost can't catch a break. It's like you got to hit a home run every time, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I definitely agree with that on that point. Do you think right now that this whole thing about – so substantial equivalence is put on hold, right? Companies don't have to worry about that. Do you see right now that that could be a way of saving – the shortage from getting worse? I think it helps it right now that the fact that companies can now possibly get some stuff out, and they may try to get it out faster in case this thing turns back around against the industry in an appeal or something.
But that could work against us too, because, you know, if you're rushing to get stuff out, that's when you make, you know, lesser quality product.
Yeah.
True. That's true. Yeah.
But yeah, I think that there's going to be a little bit of a wild, wild west here for a spell. We don't know how long that will be, but I'm pretty sure that there's going to be some, you know, new brands, new products, maybe even new companies for at least a little while until things get settled. Hopefully it stays the way it is now, but I'm expecting there'll be some fun stuff coming down the pike.
Yeah, I think ultimately there's going to be some more creativity we're going to get, that maybe if there's been a creativity down spiral in recent years, I think we're going to see a little uptick with that. So I think from a creative standpoint, I think we're going to see some stuff happen.
I think the guys that were ready for that opportunity, you're going to see it, you know. And I can't speak for them, but man, you know, it would be killer if Wonderlust made it into the U.S. I mean, the Neanderthal HS is my favorite of the blend. And it's available in Germany. So, like, those cigars never came in because of substantial equivalency. You know, I mean, that wouldn't be a lower quality product that could just come right in. I think that other guys have already prepared other blends that they've been figuring out how to navigate it into the substantial equivalency and to argue that it is substantially equivalent and, you know, kind of offsetting that pressure and bringing them on into the U.S., is definitely more pliable. So,
yeah, I agree with that point as well. So I think it's a good thing that we'll see come down the pipe. But like I said, hopefully it's not an explosion of like 2016, what we saw everything hitting the wall. I don't think it will be like 2016.
It will get Balmoral back in the U.S.
That's what I was going to ask you, that Ben.
I would be ecstatic if that happened. I miss those damn things.
Oh, you could put a call into Justin right now.
He probably don't want to hear from me right now.
That's okay.
Yeah, I think, you know, Eric made a great point about that. Like, I mean, if you could probably see a lot of really interesting things come in, you know, and I would like to see, you know, the German Neanderthal come in, because I actually tried one of those a few months back, and I thought it was probably the best one by far.
I think Wonderlust is a fantastic blend too.
Yeah.
I remember when I first smoked it, that was an incredible blend. So I'd love to see, Skip may decide, you know what, he's going to protect that for Germany. And I'd understand that too, but certainly there's an option there. He can always release a Wonderlust size or something maybe for the U.S.
Right. Exactly.
Right. You know, so yeah.
Potential there now, you know,
there's a lot of room. There's a lot of room to do things now with that ruling.
Yeah. So, like I said, I don't think we can say anything bad about it now. I guess long term, we'll see what the effects are of that, you know, But it's going to be interesting on that. All right. So, a couple of things I want to do. We have two more larger topics, but there's a couple of fun topics in between we'll do. We'll kind of get to that. First question I have, and this is the Cattle Baron steak question I have for the panel tonight. I want to know your favorite steakhouse. And hopefully no one's vegan on this panel. I don't think anyone is.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I'll start. The best steakhouse in the world is in Omaha, Nebraska. It's called Farmer Brown's. And when my boys played hockey, we would travel to Omaha to play tournaments occasionally. And there was a guy from Omaha, one of the dads on the team. And he's like, oh, you got to come to this place. And so we drive, we're going through all, you know, just fields. And I was like, where the heck are we going? Like, we literally pull up to like a, it was like a ranch somewhere. And there's these two like 96-year-old twin ladies that have had this steakhouse. And apparently like Johnny Carson used to eat there. And it has a crazy history. I think the two ladies have since passed on. In fact, I'm sure they have. But it was the most incredible prime rib that I've ever had. It was like literally like this tall. You could cut it with a fork. It was amazing. And anytime that I'm even, you know, within like 4 hours of Farmer Brown's, I will find a way to like work that into my trip. It's literally the greatest food I've ever eaten in my life. It's incredible.
Johnny Carson was from Nebraska too, I think.
Yeah. That's right. Yep. That's right. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it makes some sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
The king. Ben, how about you? You got to imagine that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to a lot of steakhouses. I mean, back home in Mississippi, where I'm from, I mean, the best we had was Ruth Chris that was based out of New Orleans. And I go there a lot because a good friend of mine is the general manager there, so which I get the hookup. So,
right.
But since I've been to Dallas, I've only been here a month. I went to – my wife took me to a place called Lonesome Dove that's run by a really world-renowned chef called Chef Tim Love. He's been on Food Network a lot. He's really an amazing chef. And I went and had a Wagyu New York strip there that was probably the best thing I've ever put in my mouth anywhere. It was phenomenal. And it's a little place that's in Fort Worth by the stockyards. And I tell you what, man, it was unbelievable. That was last weekend when I went there. It's truly the best steak I probably have ever had. And I've been to a bunch of steakhouses all over the place, but that was fantastic.
Awesome. How about you, Mike?
For me, man, I got to tell you, there was one place that was instantly popped in my head, and a friend of mine took me there in Nashville, Tennessee, and it's a place called The Standard. And you know, he had like his own private section where we sat down, and it was like in the cellar, and the steak was absolutely incredible, to a point where, you know, it's like kind of sitting in first class and then you go back to coach. Like, I feel like I have been constantly chasing that for the rest of my life since I've had that meal. Every steak has been okay, but it just hasn't been that. And man, you know, hands down The Standard by far. There's not even a close second.
Very good. Very good. So that was our cowbell and steak question tonight. I want to mention, just go around and find out what everyone was smoking tonight, sponsored by Tailored Smoke, located in the heart of downtown Charlotte's epicenter, now outside the Charlotte Motor Speedway in Concord, North Carolina. Tailored Smoke is your one-stop shop for a tailored smoking experience. So we'll kind of start in reverse. Mike, what were you smoking tonight?
Yeah, well, I started with the Posanya Broadleaf Robusto, and then I went to the Neanderthal HS. I figured I'd commit for some, you know, full flavor party type of this is a wild panel. You guys are out of control. And I figured that was the perfect fit for this panel.
There you go. There you go. Ben, what about you?
Yeah, I brought out three because I didn't know how long we would go. So the first one I was smoking on the air was that Valakari Messenger. It's a Connecticut. It's really good. It's a complex Connecticut with some balls to it. It's a Nicaragua tobacco. In my shop, Parkway Cigars in Tallahassee, that's where it came from. That's kind of help with that blend, so I'm kind of partial to that. What I'm going to smoke next is I got the Laranja Reserve, the Robusto Extra. I can't get enough of these. I don't know. I mean, I've always loved them, but my God, something's happened to me lately. I can smoke them back to back. And the last cigar of the night I got is the new Mil Diaz Crown Heads. Finish the night off with that one.
Look at you, you show off.
Very, very different Crown Heads release.
Yeah, it's way different.
It's way different than anything I've had from them. Yeah.
Yeah, what's weird is it's got a nice little spice kick to it, and I don't like spicy cigars.
Right.
I don't like overly spicy stuff. This one has a nice spice kick, but it's accented. It's like an accent, you know, like we just talk about well seasoned steak. It's kind of the way it goes with that one too. Like it's very different from anything they've got. Spicy, but not overly so. It's really good. I've kind of been impressed with it.
Very good. Eric, what about you?
I grabbed a Bayas Artes Maduro. I hadn't had the Maduro yet, so it was in the smoking Cigar of the Month Club, so I grabbed that and smoked it. It's very good. I'm not going to do backflips over it, but it was an excellent smoke.
Is that how you say it? Bayas Artes? I don't know.
Yep.
My Latin and my Spanish suck, so I don't know. I could be wrong on that one.
Good. Very good. Aaron, what about you?
I'm trying the Onyx Bold Nicaragua for the first time tonight. So it's an interesting cigar. It's a little bit of a different take on the Onyx. It's a little more fuller strength than I remember the original being. But, I'll go with along with what Eric was saying. I'm not going to do backflips over it, but it's all right.
Raining endorsement, Aaron. Raining.
Actually, I just lit up a Julius Caesar Robusto. And I have as my next cigar a Neanderthal GD that I'm going to light up. And what I was smoking beforehand was an EP Carrillo 15th anniversary for Atlantic Cigar. I don't think people really see that, which was a takeoff of the Elencos. So that's my lineup for tonight. So nice. I'm into it. Yep. All right. What we're going to do is we're going to do a word from the sponsor. If you guys need to stretch or take a bio break, I'll go through that, and then we'll get into our next segment. We're not gonna go 4 hours, guys. Don't worry. Okay. All right. And I want to mention our sponsor, Jerry Tobacco. The authentic Corojo leaf is one of the most robust and flavorful leaves out there. During the golden age of cigars in Cuba, it was a leaf of choice to make some of the world's greatest cigars. Because it is one of the most challenging ones to cultivate, it fell out of favor by the 1990s. In the Hamastron Valley of Honduras, Julio Arroyo took on the challenge of growing Corojo from the original seeds, and in 2000, he successfully reintroduced authentic Corojo back to the market. With over 50 years' experience in the tobacco business, from growing and curing tobacco to cigar production, the Jerry Tobacco Farm has been able to continue to deliver products to market with authentic Corojo. Now, with Jerry Tobacco, they bring you the Aladino line, available in a 100% authentic Corojo Puro, San Andreas Maduro, Ecuadorian Connecticut Shade, Habano, and Cameroon, that represents the golden age of cigars from 1947 to 1961. It's now available, all of them, at your local retailer, and you can be sure to ask for Jerry Tobacco, a legacy that is tasted in every draw. And by Toscano Cigars, as rustic and strong as the people who smoke them, try Toscanic's rustic and full-body flavors and aromas. Made in Italy with 100% dark fire-cured tobacco from the United States and Italy, it's one of the best-selling cigars in the world. Toscano Cigars are the perfect combination of American and Italian craftsmanship, whether in the traditional long format or the short format Toscanello. Toscano Cigars are dry-cured, handmade, and fire-cured for your enjoyment anytime, anywhere. Visit your local premium cigar retailer today and look for Toscano Cigars. And by A.J. Fernandez Cigars. A.J. Fernandez's New World brand is named in the honor of the discovery of tobacco by Christopher Columbus's expedition in 1492. Fernandez has collaborated with his father, Ishmael, on the cigar, which is comprised of a wrapper from Nicaragua, covering a binder from the Jalapa Valley, and a filler blend of Ometepe, Condega, and Esteli tobaccos. The core line debuted in 2014, and it was followed by New World Connecticut, New World Puerto Especial, and New World Cameroon. All four blends are meant to captivate the palate of any cigar smoker. If you're beginning to discover the fine world of premium handmade cigars, the New World Connecticut's for you. If you're into the rich full-body blends, Puro Especial's for you. And if you're into complex flavors, the New World Cameroon is for you. Finally, if you're into the robust and earthy flavors with notes of espresso, the New World Oscuro's for you. Visit www.ajfcigars.com to learn more. and by M. Bombay Cigars. M. Bombay Cigars represents the most admired cigar culture of Cuba. They select the best of the best quality tobacco to use in the aging process. M. Bombay Cigars are enrolled in Costa Rica by some of the world's most experienced cigar rollers, giving it a unique smoking experience. The band portrays the detailed and artistic nature of our small industry. Try M. Bombay, Gaia, M. Cuba, and the M. Esteli line. M. Bombay Cigars, where the cigar is a way of life. And we're going to get into our Alec Bradley Live True segment, and it's sponsored by Alec Bradley. Alec Bradley, the family company. Alan Rubin named the company after his two sons, Alec and Bradley, when they were just little tykes. Now they're all grown up, walking alongside their dad, making the best damn cigars you ever smoked. Join the family. Try one today. Learn more at alecbradley.com. So this is Alec Bradley Live True segment. This is, again, a little fun segment where we take a break from some of the cigar industry talk. And it's a simple question tonight. And it's funny. I think I know most people's answers to these questions. I'm going to see if I get it right. So COVID-19 has put a mess on the sports world. And I want to know the sport that you're most happy is back right now or about to come back. So I'm going to start this one off with Ben this time. Is he back?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I didn't see you for a second. Okay. I had you
repeat it again, or what were we talking about again?
So COVID-19's put a squash on a lot of sports for a while, and now a lot of sports are coming back or are in the process of coming back. And I want to know, what sport are you most excited about coming back right now?
Probably college football, to be totally honest. I mean, that's my favorite sport, you know. Baseball's back. You know, I'm a big soccer fan, the real football. Mm-hmm. You know, and the NFL, I mean, a little bit of the NBA, but I know most of college football is not coming back. My beloved SEC is going to play, you know, themselves for, what, 8 games, you know, for the season. But I remember when I was watching, I remember that, you know, the first match I saw was a Bayern Munich soccer match. And it was so weird watching that without fans. I mean, it was like you heard all the little noises on the pitch that you normally can't hear when, because of the crowd, you know, and stuff. And, you know, you would actually hear the soccer ball hit the net. You could hear that. And then when they scored a goal, they couldn't do a celebration. It couldn't do anything. There was no cheering. It was so weird. It was like watching like a little – like a practice. And this is one of the top teams in the world, and one of the biggest soccer leagues in the world, you know. So I'm kind of like, I was almost like halfway through the match, I almost turned it off because it was so odd, right? But now they got, I guess, you know, people figured that out. They're actually piping in on the televised games. They're piping in, you know, fake crowd noise, just to look the home, not the cheering or nothing. That made all the difference in the world, I'll tell you, you know. And I thought it was kind of cool how baseball, you know, is putting up the cardboard cutouts of fans in the seats, you know. I thought that was kind of neat, you know. But I think it's going to be real eye-opener seeing how the NFL and college football handles it. Because, you know, you sit a lot of places and say, or we'll at 25%, you know, the capacity in to watch a game. I don't know how you figure that out. Like, is it going to be just season ticket holders or lottery? I don't know how they're going to figure that out, but sports without fans is just – it's weird. You know, like I watch a few Pelicans games, and when they're in the bubble, it was just – I didn't really enjoy it. I don't know. Without the fans, it's just not good, you know. And I don't see how you could really – like football, you have to travel. You have to. You just have to do it. And it's, they're such huge teams. I don't see how you keep that safe when baseball had such an issue in the beginning when they started – bringing it back. The Marlins, they missed like four or five games whenever they had
that.
A week and a half, two weeks.
And the Phillies were right down with them too with that. We lost a week.
Yeah, because they played Florida that time, the Miami, mm-hmm. You know. So they basically affected each other. I don't know where it started at, but I think it was the Miami team. But yeah, I mean, how do you do that with a football team? You know, I remember reading, you know, spring practices and stuff and getting ready for the season, Alabama and LSU both had a ton of kids go down with COVID after the first practice. So I don't know, how are you going to do these games and stuff? And How do you keep – if you do let 25% of the fans in, or they got to sit like 6 feet apart with mask on too, how long is that going to last? After the first 5 minutes maybe? You know, I don't know. It's going to be weird. It's definitely going to be weird, especially football. That's going to be a real odd to see any NFL games or college games with no fans. You know, those giant stadiums. I mean, soccer stadiums are pretty big. Some of those are huge, but nothing compared to NFL stadiums, you know, or even some college, you know, stadiums like in Texas and in the SEC. So I'm kind of curious to see how they pull that off. You know, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you see a lot of more college teams just, you know, just decide to opt out, not play, you know. They're still talking about, like, you know, maybe Ohio State not, you know, starting to play other teams, not in the conference, just go or have even other bigger names, like, come to the play of the SEC teams just because they need – let's just say it. College football pays a lot at a university. A lot of money comes in from that. It's a huge cash cow for them. So without having college football, that's a lot of revenue that they're missing out on. We're talking, you know, billions. So they're going to push it as much as they can. But how far do you push it before you have a major incident with it, you know?
That's true. You know, in college basketball, the men's tournament's the biggest moneymaker. I don't know what happened TV-wise last year, if money was refunded or not spent, but that was a huge – they took a huge blow not having a March Madness last year.
True. But the March Madness, if you scale it back, you could do a bubble thing like the NBA. The NBA handled it perfectly.
Yeah.
They did it perfect.
They didn't, like I said, everything hit so fast and the timing was really bad for them, unfortunately. So they just got, you know, they really had to cancel it. There was no choice there. But yeah. Then the NBA took some time to figure it out.
The NCAA could kind of use that model for their basketball, you know? I mean, but then again, you're talking about student athletes. There should be a class as well. So I don't know. I guess they could do virtual there too, but I don't know. It's a little bit different. College versus professional sports. So, I don't know. I just enjoy college more. I mean, because when I watch – I went to Mississippi State. So, when I watch Mississippi State play, it's like I'm watching my family out there on the field, you know. So, it's different. Like, I love the Saints. I love the Braves. I love my Pelicans. It's not the same as college, you know. So, I kind of would – even with saying that, though, I would rather them be safe than be able to watch – them play Alabama and LSU, to be honest, you know. So, see how they work it out. But at least, like I said, you got all the pro sports are kind of – they're out there. They're like the litmus test, figuring out, you know, or basically the canary in the coal mine. Like, does this work? Does it not work? NBA bubble worked. Baseball's kind of – they kind of really mess it up at the beginning really bad. So, I don't know. We'll have to see, but I love to see football, but I don't know how it's going to work. I'll be totally honest. I don't see how the hell the NFL pulls this off.
I've been predicting they're not going to do a full season this year. Now they may get a Super Bowl in somehow, but I'm still predicting. And that's going to be the big question. Even if they put fans in the Super Bowl, we're going to start to hear that talk probably come in the fall, depending on how things are going. Yeah.
Out of all of us, Mike is praying that they have some kind of a season. Because his team, they sign a bunch of old people that might not be able to come back. So, true. He's got a narrow window for his bus.
So, Mike, I'll go to you right now. I mean, I know you're a big Tampa fan. Is there any sport, like, what sport are you most – I'm assuming it may be football, but maybe something else. Is there some sport you're excited about coming back right now?
Yeah, I mean, aside from bowling, I'm very excited about the NFL, you know. So as far as what they're doing, what Tampa Bay's – I'm a season ticket holder. So what they've done is they've eliminated people coming to the games for the first two games that are in Raymond James. After that, if you're a season ticket holder, you're eligible to purchase tickets. They just won't be in your seats. So that earmarks it for the Green Bay game, which should be pretty epic. I'm thinking I want to go to that one. I would love to try and go to the Saints game, like – I mean, come on. Brady and Drew Brees is going to be pretty epic.
Yep.
So I'm excited about the NFL. I'm glad that they're moving forward with it. I think the Jacksonville Jaguars, they're planning on taking the season off because they've gotten rid of everybody, which I kind of look at scratching my head. But, hey, if they want to give up Fournette, Tampa Bay's happy to take them. So.
Well, I think
that was a weird one.
Everyone knows I'm the biggest Tom Coughlin apologist and fan out there, but I'll say one thing about Tom Coughlin he's never been good at. He doesn't do good with these head case players.
Yeah.
He just hasn't. I mean, be realistic, and I think, you know, you've seen it with other guys, Odell Beckham and Plaxico and stuff like that. But that being said, Bruce Arians, I think, is a guy, if a coach can get through to him, Fournette, it's Bruce Arians. If you can't play for Bruce Arians, then you don't belong in the NFL.
You think he's that much of a head case? I mean, the other two you mentioned were wide receivers. Then I get
it. There were a lot of issues, I thought, in Jacksonville with him, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, he missed he's injury prone, but it was also games where there was disciplinary things that were going on there, too.
Well, Bruce Arians, I think, is a little more pass-heavy anyways.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, he's one of my favorite coaches in the league. I think that was a great hire by Tampa Bay last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're gonna go for it this year. There's no question. They have to go for it this year. The expectations are gonna be very high on that team. Like anything close of not getting deep into the playoffs this year is gonna be considered a miss.
Tampa Bay, New England, Super Bowl. Epic.
No way. Are you kidding?
I want to see that because I want to see the New England fans, like, just the reaction.
It'd be so amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
The over-under on how many games Tom Brady actually finishes this season.
Yeah.
He finishes all of them.
No. I think he plays every game. Yep, I do too.
He's played the NFC South. It's a little bit different down here.
Like what? For what aspect? Atlanta? They're a joke.
What's Atlanta?
Exactly. That's the hat that you have on.
I tell you, Atlanta just made it. I mean, they signed Todd Gurley, which is going to be interesting.
Yeah. That's Carolina, you know, okay, so realistically, we're talking about the Saints,
and yeah.
Right? That's kind of what it boils down to. Now, I heard the Camara might be on the chopping block. So,
yeah, I heard.
No. You know,
yes. It's been coming. It came out today.
Yeah, so.
No. I guarantee that ain't happening.
But what happens if he goes away? I mean,
he's not going away.
He was underutilized last year. You know, it was just the Michael Thomas show. I mean, that feels one-dimensional to me, is all I'm saying. It just feels one-dimensional. I might be wrong, but I feel like, you know, the whole pass interference call that happened 2 years ago for New Orleans, I don't think that they've been able to recover from that. I just feel like something has to change. There's got to be mix up there, and that hasn't occurred yet, you know. And how you didn't win that game is all Sean Payton's fault. He should have lost his job. That's it. I'm leaving it.
Oh, that's just dumb talk there. No, but I will say that pass interference call is not what cost them the trip to the Super Bowl. I mean, even with that, they have plenty of time to win score again and win. And they go to overtime. You should have won it in overtime too. I don't want to hear the pass interference bullshit from the Saints fan. That's a big pet peeve of mine. I don't want to hear that whiny shit.
I'm your coach. That's where I blame your coach. We should be able to turn that whole team around, say, we have time, we can finish the game strong. And they didn't.
The worst one was actually the Vikings game last year.
Yeah, that was a tough one too. I mean, yeah. You got room for Drew Brees, right? Yeah, there's part of me that you're still like, come on, man. You know, like, he did that whole thing on the side of the field when he broke the record. And he grabs his kids and he's like, hey, you can accomplish anything in this world. And, like, fucking epic, you know. He's like, how do you not root for that guy, you know? And just they haven't been the same since that game. And and now Kamara is gonna go to, you know, Cleveland or something.
I'll take him on the Giants. No, well, he won't be playing time on the Giants. I should say he won't get the time.
On what about Barkley? Wait, is he gonna?
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, he's not gonna get time on the Giants with Barkley. Yeah.
Right. No, he's not going anywhere.
We'll see. Eric, I'm going to turn it to you. I think I know the answer to your question on this one. The answer to this question with you, but what?
Well, yeah. I mean, professional cornhole.
I didn't expect that one.
That's better than bowling. Better than bowling. You know.
Did they ever take time off?
Wow, I don't know. That's a good question.
Are they operating in a bubble?
Obviously, for me, you know, it's NHL hockey. I mean, that's what I live and breathe. So I think the NHL did the best of any of the pro sports to come up with a plan, stick to the plan, and they've put on a really entertaining postseason up to this point, and it's been great having them back. I mean, I got to say, it's so nice to have something else to talk about in the studio here besides everything else that's been going on. So, yeah, hockey, man. Oh, I've been eating, sleeping, and breathing it, baby.
Very good.
You know, there's something about a sport where you can just fight. I mean, it's not why you're there. That's not the intention of the sport. But two guys can just legitimately beat the shit out of each other. And, you know, I respect that. I wish that happened more with other sports, you know? Because I'd love to see, like, an O-line guy just really just kind of take on a cornerback or something. I think that would be awesome.
That's interesting. All right, Aaron, I know the answer for you, but I'll let you go.
Yeah, I mean, it's baseball. I mean, it's the last sport I really follow anymore. Yeah. I've kind of given up on all the rest of the sports, but yeah, I mean, what Ben was saying earlier about not having fans in the stands, it's definitely a different kind of ambiance for the game. But I was hoping that this year baseball would give us the opportunity, like if you use the MLB app, to just have an option for field noise, because I would love to just hear all the cursing and stuff that's going on and all the managers and the people in the dugout yelling at the umpires about ball and strike calls and all that stuff that's going on. But I know the baseball wouldn't do it because they don't want the fans to know that there's four-letter words that are used in baseball, because it's a, you know, it's a family sport that's, you know, everybody's in church when they're not on the baseball field. So they weren't going to allow that to happen. But I think that's a missed opportunity, because I think it would have been fantastic for people to really get a feel for what happens on the field during a game.
Yeah, it's funny you say that too, because I remember I was watching the Braves play the Mets, and I think it was Max Fried. He struck a batter out, and it was the last out of the inning, and it was a young kid. I don't even remember what his name was. Somebody I didn't even heard of. He strikes and goes, "Fuck!" And it's right on TV.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, "We have to apologize for that. We're sorry everybody was watching that."
Yeah.
I'm surprised that this hasn't happened before now.
Yeah.
How about that Kansas City announcer losing his job?
Cincinnati.
Oh, Cincinnati, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, he lost his job in – not just baseball.
On the football. Air, he lost his job.
That was unreal. Like when he started doing the game, and then he starts talking, and then the next thing you know, he's like, "I'm leaving." You know, so-and-so's taking over. I hope I still have a job. He's like,
got fired on the headset, man.
He got fired. They told him off. They pulled him off. Yeah, because it was a doubleheader, and they pulled him off like at the beginning of the second doubleheader.
Yeah.
There was a home run hit in the second of the doubleheader, and
he called the home run in the middle of his apology.
Amazing. He called the home run, and he was about to start the apology. The home run goes. It's Tom Brenneman, and then the apology. He just couldn't even react. And it was a Cincinnati home run, I believe. So he couldn't even react to it. And he's like, "I don't see you."
I totally missed that. I didn't even hear it.
Yeah,
go to YouTube, man. You'll get it. It's fantastic.
Tom Brenneman. It's epic. It's epic. All right, and then all the sports I agree with, because I'm a big sports fan. But the one I'll add in is Tour de France, which you may I actually used to be a very big fan. I lost interest when the drug stuff hit. I've gotten back into it in the last few years, but it's always hard to watch with the trade shows usually during it. But the good thing is I like the fact that starting the race in after the trade show, and I'm working at home so I can watch it every day. And the sport's come a long way. It's still got to earn its way back, I think, trust with the fans, but it's getting it. So I'm happy about that. All right. So what we're going to do is we'll do one more round of commercial breaks. Then I have two more topics, one short and one maybe medium. So we'll get right into that right now. And Oh, I got my commercial up there. All right. Want to mention Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust. With Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, master blender Steve Saka set out to create Pearls and Compromiso, cigars without compromise. This represents an expression of Saka's closely held values and attests in three simple words everything Saka wants to accomplish. Cigars are more than a passion, Saka. They are a way of life. As for the brands of Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, Sobra Mesa, Mi Querida, Umbagog, Muestra de Saka, Todos los Días, and Sin Compromiso, your local tobacconist. And by La Aurora Cigars. In the heart of Santiago, Dominican Republic, on the rolling floor, the La Aurora Cigar Factory is a section reserved only for the elite, the best of the best. These elite cigar rollers work for over 10 years to simply get the opportunity to make a historic cigar. Those cigars are the La Aurora Preferidos, featuring six different wrappers in a beautifully packaged perfecto shape. La Aurora Preferidos are the preferred cigar of the Leon family for over 115 years. Take part in a legendary tradition that started the Dominican cigar industry. Look to the lion, La Aurora Cigars. We are Dominican defined. And by J.C. Newman Cigar Company. Founded in 1895 by Julius Caesar Newman, the J.C. Newman Cigar Company is the oldest family-owned premium cigar maker in America. For four generations and 125 years, J.C. Newman has been handcrafting many of the world's finest cigars. J.C. Newman is headquartered in an iconic 109-year-old-plus cigar factory in the Ybor City National Historic Landmark District in Tampa, Florida. At this factory known as El Rahol, J.C. Newman roasts premium cigars by hand and hand-operated cigar machines. The J.C. Newman Pensa factory is the second largest in Nicaragua. It's where Brick House, Pearl de Mar, El Baton, Quorum, and Yagua cigars are hand-rolled. J.C. Newman's Diamond Crown, Maximus, Julius Caesar, and Black Diamond cigars are handmade by Tabacalera A. Fuente in the Dominican Republic. With its longtime partners, the Arturo Fuente family, the Newmans founded the Cigar Family Charitable Foundation, which supports low-income families in the Dominican Republic with education, healthcare, vocational training, and clean water. Visit jcnewman.com to learn more. By Casa Cuevas Cigars. The Cuevas family has four generations of experience in cigar making. For many years, they have manufactured cigars for many industry leaders out of the Las Lavas factory in the Dominican Republic. Now the Cuevas family brings their very own brand to market with Casa Cuevas Cigars. Try the Casa Cuevas Connecticut, the Casa Cuevas Habano, the Casa Cuevas Maduro, as well as the Cuevas Reserva line. If they don't carry it, be sure to ask your local retailer for Casa Cuevas Cigars. Casa Cuevas Cigars, from our casa to yours. And finally, by Aventura Cigars. Aventura the Explorer is the first creation by Marcel Noble and Henderson Ventura. Immediately after lighting up the Explorer, the Mexican wrapper will delight the aficionado with its dark chocolate flavor. After a while and pleasure, the Dominican filler will flatter the aficionado's palate with wonderful spicy and leather aromas and unite it with the wooden sweetness from Ecuador. Try Aventura the Explorer and explore the wonderful experience. So we're going to get into our next topic here. And this is one, I know that it's a brand that kind of, some of us on the panel, have, you know, we've followed this brand for a long time. I just want to, this is more just get some general thoughts. I think we, and that's the shutting down of Nat Sherman that's happening at the end of the month. I know from, at least I could speak for Eric, myself, and Ben. I know Eric and I have given Nat Sherman a cigar of the year at one point. Ben, I know you're a longtime fan of this brand, so... get all everyone's thoughts on this. Ben, I want to start this one off with you. I haven't heard
Coop, yeah. I'm sorry. I hate to do this, but I have to go. I apologize to all of you guys, but I got to go get my daughter. I have to just go get her. It happened a little sooner than I thought, so I apologize for that, but I got to go.
It's totally okay, man.
All right. Sorry, guys.
We appreciate it. Eric, thanks for hanging in there. And I think you have Casa Cuevas on tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow's Rafael Nadal. And then next week's Luis Cuevas. So
Okay, great.
Thanks to Aaron, Ben, Mike, of course. Thanks, Coop, for having me. It was a blast as always. We'll see you guys online.
Take care, Eric. Thanks for joining us.
See you, buddy.
All right, take care.
See you guys.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was a sad day when I saw that news, man. What the hell?
All your brands, man.
Your brands
are beating
this year. Yeah.
I know, man. It really hit whenever I saw, you know, Michael Hurtlott's just at the townhouse. Talking about after 90 years, they're shutting it down. That was like, I mean, just besides the cigar thing, like I'm a big history guy. I love history. I mean, just to know that shutting down after 90 years is just gut-wrenching, you know. I'm just surprised they couldn't have worked out something with somebody to pick up Nat Sherman cigars and continue that legacy on. That's just baffling to me that they couldn't pull something off. But I don't know. I mean, probably not going to be the last one, to be totally honest, you know.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but it was that was a sad, sad day. Yeah. I've been buying up all I can, too.
You know, I kind of regret, Ben, that when we were in New York that time, we didn't get the Nat Sherman together.
I know. Yeah. I thought about that, too.
Yeah, I actually thought about it afterward. I said, we'll get that next time, right? But now it never happens, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was just, as a matter of fact, myself and my shop owner in Biloxi, the cigar shop in Biloxi, we actually flew up to New York to go to the Davidoff Nicaragua lease at, I think it was Mulberry Cigars. Yeah, that's where it was. And we got there a day early. We visited, you know, the Davidoff store on Madison Avenue and the Columbus Circle when it was there. We went to De La Concha. And we were supposed to go to the Nat Sherman townhouse. I was texting her, and I'm like, hey, you know, we're, you know, Paul and I are in town. We want to drop by and see you. Are you at the townhouse? He said, oh, man, I just left. I'm flying down. I can't remember where he was flying to. He said, you know, I'm leaving the country. You know, but go ahead and go by. You know, I told the guys y'all be coming, and well, they'll take care of you. Well, in while we're at De La Concha, we're about to get up and leave, and Hickey Kilmer comes in and sits out on our table. I'm not leaving. I wasn't going to leave. So we ended up spending a whole lot more time there. We never made it there. It was the same thought, like, okay, well, you know, next time I'm in the area, you know, I'll run by there and check it out. And now it's too late. So never wait.
So, Ben, here's my idea. Start a GoFundMe page, okay? And say you're gonna start Ben Lee Cigars, right? And you're going to distribute Balmoral and Royal Agio, the San Pedro, and Nat Sherman.
I'll be a billionaire by the end of the year.
I believe it. So get that, Ben, let's get that GoFundMe page up for Ben, and we can bring these brands back.
Let's make it go viral.
Yeah. Mike, what about you? Any thoughts on that?
An Icon Go. I think that a lot of people anticipated going, though. I think that when the original merger happened, everybody was kind of looking at them thinking, you know, okay. And the fact that they kept going for as long as they did, I think that was pretty impressive. You know, they have a good staff. You know, I know a couple of guys that work there, and it sucks to see anybody get out of work. It's just the sign of the times, man. You know, I mean, nobody is in downtown Manhattan. Nobody, right?
Yep.
So there's no revenue whatsoever going into that store on top of everything else that they've experienced in the past few years. So it wasn't something that I was thinking, oh, this is it for Nat Sherman. I just feel like a lot of people thought that, you know, the time had come prior to that when the merger originally happened, right? So,
did you guys think they lasted a lot longer than you thought? Like I'm sure we all had that initial thought, right? But
yeah.
They lasted almost 3 years, over 3 years, actually.
Yeah, they had a good structure. They had a good sales force. They had some creative ideas. I just think that it's difficult to, you know, to become more innovative when you have some of those, like a legendary brand per se, and you know, to kind of focus on that demographic for new consumers. And it sucks, you know. I wish that they could stay forever, but you know, Manhattan was ground zero for all this, right? And that was just on the coffin, you know.
Yeah.
I think that actually kind of gives you a true testament to where the direction that this industry is heading as well. I think that, you know, we've said this before in the beginning of this whole panel, you know, what cigars are great. There's only a few of them that are great, and, you know, and the standard has been raised, and, you know, unfortunately all of Nat Sherman's products, I guess, maybe didn't fall to that standard. So sucks. You know, but I don't think Herklotz will be out of the industry. I'm sure he'll go somewhere. You know, a lot of those guys are talented. You know, they'll find work. But, you know.
I think Herc won't be out of a job long at all. He's probably already got about 20 offers. But I honestly thought – I didn't think they would go out of business. I just honestly thought they would – spin them off and sell them to somebody, which they tried. How somebody couldn't come to terms and pick that up, I don't know. I mean, you know, Nat Sherman's always had that, you know, that kind of like, oh, that's my grandfather's cigar kind of a thing going for it, you know. But I think he, you know, he really, you know, brought some, you know, a lot to Nat Sherman brand and brought out some really good stuff, you know, especially like the Apoca Reserve, you know, and their TAA cigar I thought was the best TAA release like the year before last. So, I mean, it's phenomenal stuff that the new city came out. I thought the Sterling was amazing. I love the Sterling too.
I thought Sterling would have been. I thought it was going to be there. I mean, I thought that was going to be their Davidoff.
I mean, so what did they do wrong that, you know, like I, as a retailer, I never had people come in and say, "Hey, you have that new Nat Sherman, or you have that Nat Sherman. I really want that cigar." You know, so it's kind of difficult for me to go full on with a brand like that. Right. So what did they do wrong? What happened?
This is my feeling. I don't know. Nat Sherman's a brand that's so cosmopolitan that, and there's nothing against Orlando area or anything like that. I just don't know if that brand fits in with the vibe of that market. It's very much a New York brand. I mean, it's very much a big city brand is what have I always thought of that brand. It's the cigar of the big city. And I don't know if they've ever, you know, they had some success in the last 10 years, no doubt about, but I don't, you know, I thought maybe when Altria did it, that maybe they would try to find some other creative ways to do things with Nat Sherman, but I think FDA played a role in that, as well as just in general, Altria's role against the cigarette industry. So I think it was kind of doomed from the start, unfortunately, where they already had a little bit of a disadvantage. I don't think they were able to do much more with that.
Right. Yeah, when Altria bought Nat Sherman, they bought it for the cigarette stuff. That's all they cared about. Yeah. Cigars was something that was just tagging along with it. They didn't get to me as I saw things happening, it almost seems to me like they were just trying to like say, yeah, a cigar. We better do a couple of things for that. You know, whatever. I don't know. We'll get to it later. Almost like they didn't really care about it at all, you know. And it was probably, you know, Herngelot's pushing them to do what they did under their reign, you know. But I don't think Altria ever cared about the cigar lines at all, the cigar part. And if that went away, I don't think they cared anyway. They really did.
Imagine having a company so big that you're not interested in the few million dollars that the cigars bring. You know, it's like,
man, you got, you know what I mean? Yeah. You got financial CFOs in there that look at this and they're like, why was tobacco sitting for how many years? Cigars right. are sitting, that's kind of the mentality, unfortunately, that an Altria brings to the table. You know, I had heard like Dave Garofalo a few years ago, he was talking about possibly how these cigarette companies were going to bite up the cigar companies. And I, from the very beginning, I didn't think that was going to happen. Just because at the time, then Dunhill just cut loose, you know, their cigar business. So there was already kind of a track record of one place where it didn't work. Nat Sherman, it was, you know, here's the interesting thing about this, what I noticed. The first year at the trade show, Nat Sherman, they couldn't talk to any media because of the transaction, the master settlement agreement. The second year, they did talk to a few media people, and they actually were, you know, they invited us a few people into the booth, and it wasn't so much – they were kind of picking our brains. They had some of – Mike had some of the Altria people in there. They were more or less picking our brains about things, trying to get an understanding of things. It wasn't like the other way around. So I don't think they ever understood it either, to be honest with you. I just think it was very different on that.
Yeah, it was weird because we would go in there, and like the first year they bought Nat Sherman, we couldn't go in there and do video.
No, I know.
And it was because they were like, well, you know, you host on YouTube and you can't restrict YouTube for the age.
Yeah.
So you can't do it. And then like the next year was, okay, you can do it, but you got to put a disclaimer before it. And we can't talk about certain things because of the age and stuff. And I'm like, what the hell, man? It's like this weird canned thing I got to do now. And we just like, yeah, forget about it. You know, we won't worry about it, you know. We'll kind of hit some points in it, you know, because we always do like an end of the show wrap up thing, and that's the only time I could actually talk about Nat Sherman at that point. Was like, oh yeah, by the way, at the Nat Sherman booth, this came out. They're doing this, they're rebranding and stuff. They're, you know, So it was so weird, you know, and that doesn't help. I mean, when you have a cigar line that doesn't have a whole lot of new flashy stuff coming out, really didn't have anything flashy, period, let's be honest, nothing. You know, and they got that connotation, like you said, Coop, about it's kind of a big city cigar, you know, it's more cosmopolitan type. I mean, you know, and it was a cigar that's been around forever that most grandfathers probably smoked back in the day, but didn't really have it. You know, the original core lines didn't have much of a feel with new cigar smokers. A lot of them didn't know about them, you know. So cutting out basically free advertising, which is what we are,
right,
you know, for them, they kind of shot themselves in the foot with that too. And when I saw that, that was a huge red flag for me. Thinking, oh man, where is this going to go? I don't like the way where this is heading.
Yeah.
Now we know this is where we're at. It's gone.
I suppose there's this, you know, actually before I said, you mentioned grandfather's, I found out when I told my dad this, right? My dad said I went to Nat Sherman with his father at 8 years old. He went there. He was 8 years old. He went to his first Nat Sherman store with his father. And I was like, wow, that was a really interesting, you know, just that's how long it very much was a New York thing. You know, especially people, older folks, my father, they looked at that as like the iconic store in New York. He doesn't really relate to the Davidoff as much or, you know, the Grand Havana Room and things like that. But the Nat Sherman's one he totally related to. So I suppose there's a chance that someone could still buy the name. But I don't – the brand names. But they had started to separate the Nat Sherman name off of that, if you noticed, the last year.
Yeah. That's where the rebranding was part of that.
Yeah, and I think that was – and I think it was – they were kind of doing that with the intention of they needed to separate it from the cigarettes was the issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. You know, talking about grandfather brand, like I said, the first – I had one or two Nat Sherman before this, but I really didn't get into them until, you know, my home shop – in Biloxi, the cigar shop, that the owner brought him in. The reason he brought him in is because he remembers, because his main business is actually he's a beer distributor for Miller Coors. And his grandfather founded it, you know, way back in the day, way back. And he remembers riding in a truck with his grandfather, and he smoked Nat Sherman. And that's why he was like, oh, dude, I really need to bring those in. I forgot about that. My grandfather smoked them all the time. And we brought him in the shop, you know, and it was probably, you know, he probably pushed it more than anything because it was a nostalgia brand for him. But it sold really, really well in Biloxi. So, you know, but
it had,
he
it had
brought
it small,
in because of that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think if the retailer gets behind it too, like any brand, you know, it's going to do well. I mean, and so, yeah. And like I said, worked in Biloxi, I mean, I work for Mike, you know, and that's
right.
That's sometimes that's just the case. I think Nat Sherman was ultimately hurt by they didn't do a lot the last 4 years either in terms of releases. And I think that hurts. I don't think there's any way you have to still come out with stuff. Yeah. You know, they did some limiteds and stuff. You know, it's interesting. This came up, I think it was on one of the Developing Palates HERFs. Mike Hercotz was on the HERF, and he was like raving about the packaging on that the last TA cigar of 2020, and it was in a Mazo, it was in a paper bundle, and I just went off on it, right? Nat Sherman should not be in a TA cigar, should not be in a paper bundle, right? And yeah. Mike said, well, you know, we didn't want to wait for the boxes, and I was like, well, now I know why they didn't want to wait for the boxes.
Yeah,
they had to release that thing.
Yeah, and plus, I think what else hurt them, too, is they really didn't change too much with the times. You know, like, think about today's cigar smokers. You know, a lot of them want more full-bodied, robust cigars. Way more full-flavored, full-body stuff. And they just don't have anything like that.
No.
Nothing. I mean, the closest thing was probably, the 1930, maybe?
That was the one I was thinking of, yeah.
And that's pretty much it. And to me, that was still... That's still not a very – that's not a full-bodied cigar in today's standards, you know. So, I mean, I think that hurt them a little bit too, you know. I don't know. I mean, they kind of just didn't change too much with the times. They still kind of stuck with their core, which, I mean, that's nice. That's cool and all. But throw something in there for the new cigar smoker, the new consumer. that wants something big, bold, and brash, basically.
I think Nat Sherman did need a line for the younger smoker, too. I do. Yeah. I think they needed that something for the 21 to 30-year-old smoker, which, you know, not saying that cigars can't be enjoyed by the 21 to 30-year-old, but I think that was another thing that hurt them, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to replace that demographic, right?
Yeah, and that's going to be your future. You got to think about that, too. So, you know, like, you know, a lot of people who are into the younger guys who are into some of these boutique brands right now, you know, if these brands are going to be around, they're going to be smoking these in, you know, 10, 15 years from now.
Yeah, which is like what I was saying, too. Like, those boutique brands, what are they doing? They're using interesting tobaccos. They're being innovative. But a lot of it's much stronger Nicaraguan stuff.
Yeah.
You know? People aren't looking for super mild Connecticuts anymore.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the core of Nat Sherman was those lighter bodied stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I agree. You know, and like I said, I hated what they did. I loved the packaging changes they made, except for Sterling, because I loved what they had with Sterling, that Sterling band and all that. And that was the one I was disappointed in the most. Of the other stuff, I liked the packaging changes they made. Maybe 1930 was one I missed too, Ben, just because I liked that brand as well. So, yeah, Nat Sherman, RIP at the end of this month.
RIP.
All right. Last topic is actually one that Aaron and I covered last week. And this is on bad cigar reviews, okay? Aaron and I kind of debated this a little last week, and I wanted to kind of talk about it this week on the show again because I wanted to get the panel's opinion on this. One catch with this is and Aaron, I'm skipping number 4, by the way, just because I think we hit some of that already.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, just, you know, unless you wanted to hit that one, but I think we hit most of
good.
That. Okay. Yeah. So the question is, there's the stuff about bad reviews, right? And how it affects people from media and how it affects the people who get the bad review, right? We saw it this – I don't know if you saw this past week, that one review that came out on the JSK cigar.
Yes.
The fuck the FDA. Did you see that one at all, guys?
I saw Riste's rant.
Yeah. Yeah. He got the first negative cigar review, I think, ever by a cigar reviewer. But, you know, again, you got to consider the source of that one is what I'm going to say. That was, you know, so the guy just destroyed him, right? And Riste, you know, Riste, he's going to turn it into a positive there. But what happened, where this kind of originated, right, was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the Bulb podcast, I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. That was the Crown Heads Ace Prime podcast they were doing. They had on a couple of guys from Cigar Dojo. It wasn't Eric. It was Rob and Randy. And the subject came up, you know, they were doing a media show, and the subject came up about bad review, like when a bad review happens, right?
Right.
I'm going to read a couple of quotes here, okay? And I just want to get your thoughts on these and be totally candid, Mike and Ben, on this, all right? All right. And I'll read it slow so you guys can absorb it. And it says, just because you are a journalist does not necessarily mean you are accurate and a good critic with a good palate. Sometimes you are not both. Don't try to wear both hats. Pick one, stay in your fucking lane, and let everyone else who has a decent palate actually respect the guys who know their craft 100%. That was a John Huber statement.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on that? I mean, is that something like, for example, I disagreed with it because I cover news and I cover reviews. I'm not saying I'm number one at what I do in either, but I think at least I can balance it out. So I don't understand, you know, what that comment was about. I disagreed with it.
Yeah. I also disagree with that statement. I don't think that, I think that, you know, there are going to be people that will purposely heckle, right? They're going to say some and just to try and get a rise out of you and get an emotional response. And sounds like that's what they pretty much did with John, you know? So, and you know, Riste is obviously, he's got some pretty good techniques. I got to give the guy that, you know, as far as credit for handling himself when, you know, but I didn't know about that review until I saw Aris Day talking about it. So there, and again, if somebody wants to shit on a brand and nobody really respects them, or at least you don't respect them, then it's just a simple, hey, well, fuck you too. I don't understand why it's got to be more than that. Like, I mean, I don't give a shit if somebody's going to write a, you know, for Postani, if somebody gives me a shit review,
right,
I could fucking care less. It's not, I didn't make it for them. I didn't, you know, I made the cigar for me and what I thought was good, you know. And of course, everybody's palate's going to be different, but the majority of people that don't put reasoning down as to why they thought it was a bad cigar, they don't have credibility anyway. So why would you engage? You know, it's like,
I kind of thought the same way, Mike. I think he gave this guy, it was Catman who did the review, I think he gave Catman a ton of hits this week is what happened.
Yeah.
I honestly do.
Sure.
I understand, you know, again, I understand. I think as a manufacturer, you have a right to contest a review and go public about it. But you got to be sure. Careful, because then you get to call a lot of attention to the review.
Right.
And then you give them credibility to the review to some extent.
Yeah. Why can't you just say, well, fuck you. You know, like, why can't you just move on? That's a,
yeah. Yeah. You know,
I mean, you see that shit with the celebrities and stuff too, right? You know, somebody posts a picture with their kid or something, like, that's not how you raise a child. You shouldn't be doing that. You know, it's just like, okay, whatever. Like, sit down. I don't, like, you can't engage in that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll make the soul out of a cigar without question. I have no problem doing that. You know, you're going to pay a premium for me to rip that soul out. I'm going to explain to you why I didn't like it. Right. I have no problem with doing that, but you know, and I don't even mind sitting down with the manufacturer or brand owner and saying, you know, I just wasn't a fan of it. You know, I didn't think that was a great cigar. And here's my thoughts as to why. You know, maybe they shortchanged it. Maybe it felt a little light. Maybe they could have done more with it. Maybe the wrapper seemed a little thin. Maybe it looked like they were just trying to get maximum fucking net out of their product. And, you know, I have no problem saying that to somebody, but I'm not going to go on a rant and just try and get clicks and get people to come to my site for that. You know, there's going to be legitimacy behind it. And, you know, maybe there is some with Cat's post. So, you know, I didn't read it. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, you can look at the big media sources of today, you know, they're all fucking biased. They all say shit that's, you know, skewed to some degree to get people to look, right? And I think now that this has succeeded, you're going to see more of it.
There's good points. Ben, what about you? What do you think of that?
I mean, everybody has an opinion, I guess, you know, but I don't know. I was surprised to see that from John, you know, because, you know, our interaction with him are always very, very, very good. You know, and I've known him for years and years and years, back in the early CAO days. But I don't know. I honestly don't do a whole lot of negative reviews. And I've talked about this many times on your show, actually.
Right. Yep.
Where I feel like, I quit to like restaurants, right? Like if you say, hey, you know, I'm new in the area, I'm trying to find something to eat, or I'm visiting, like, where's a good place to go? And I'm gonna say, oh, this restaurant's great, go to here, if you like this, go here, whatever. I'm not gonna say, man, this place I went had shit service, the food was disgusting. You gotta go check it out. I don't do that. If I find something spectacular, I'm trying to tell you that. Like, you know, if I like a cigar, I want to say, hey, I really enjoyed this cigar. This is what I liked about it. Check it out. Now, every now and then we'll get stuff sent to us to do a review. And, you know, we're obligated to do that review. Now, I'm going to be 100% honest with it, you know, but most of the time, it's rare that, especially nowadays, that I get a cigar, it's just utter trash. It might not be something that's in my flavor wheelhouse. And I'll say that, you know, like I said earlier in this show, I don't really like overly spicy cigars, but I can appreciate what they're trying to do with the cigar. Just because it's not my style doesn't mean it's a bad cigar, right? It's just something that I don't really particularly care for in a cigar. And I'll say that, you know, even if I give it like a lower score, I'm like, well, this is not for me. But if you like this style, go check it out because you'll probably love it. But I don't, I'm not going to go. We've never been one to just bash a cigar to be controversial, to get clicks, to get people buzzing about it, just, you know, whatever. And I'm not saying Catman did that. I'm just saying in general, you know, we're not about that. Never were. But most of the time, you know, and I've had this discussion a long time ago with, like, Charlie Minato. It was like, man, you like everything. I'm like, no, it's not like I get everything. I just want to tell people about what I like. It's kind of like we're sitting around herping in the same room. I want to say, hey, you got to try this cigar. It's really good, you know. And that's kind of the way I treat Cigar Review, is my platform just to tell everybody in written down or in the video, like, hey, I enjoyed this. You know, go check this out. It's something, you know, I want to spotlight this or whatever. So, but I've never really had anybody – I never had anybody really come at me about a negative review or anything like that. You know, I mean, I've had a lot of people come to us kind of lumping all of us together. If one person did something that might be a site I haven't even heard of, that lumps all media together because one person did something, you know, but yeah, I was surprised to see that quote. It really was. It was not something I expected from him, to be honest, but you know,
In that, and it's a very good interview. I'm actually going to post it again in the link here because there was some – John was very open saying how he does take the reviews sort of personally, not from him, but a lot of the people he works with who he knows does really good work, right? And I think that's where a little of that came from. I don't agree with what he said, but I understand where he was coming from with that. There was a second quote, okay, in this which I thought was interesting, right? And this was from Luciano, who owns Ace Prime. And this is what he said. He goes, I think it's a matter of ethics. If I am reviewing a cigar that I detest, that I hate, I shouldn't publish it. You don't have to review a cigar and ruin someone's reputation. Guys like Carlito and Ernie Carrillo Jr., they have earned some respect. You got to take this into consideration, the history, the legacy of the brand.
That's horseshit.
Unfortunately, yeah. Not everyone can do a hit cigar. Now, I agree. I don't think you have to take every cigar individually.
You can't. Look, you're not going to hit it out of the park every time, man. Yeah. You know, you're just not. Jordan didn't make every shot, final shot of the game. It just didn't happen. You know, like, there are going to be misses. So, like, I get that. I understand that, you know, you can't – the ethics bullshit, like, come on, give me a break. It is what it is. If your cigar is a dud and it doesn't go well to the masses, it happens. It's fine. You know, the champions of this industry, the people who are going to succeed, are the guys that are just going to take that punch and then make something better the next time, right?
Yep.
They're gonna continue to progress. You know, I don't begrudge John for losing his shit. It's an emotional game, right? It's a lot of people's livelihoods. I understand, you know, why he would say what he said. You know, no, none of us are perfect. So there's nothing wrong with that. I think that it's gonna have a ripple effect to some degree, which, you know, is, again, same scenario, kind of is what it is. But, I mean, to make everybody say that they like a cigar, or if they don't like it, don't say anything, you know, you're putting the standard for this industry so goddamn low that anybody can play. I don't want to be in an industry where everybody can make a Jejun cigar and everybody's going to be like, you're awesome. You know, that's unacceptable.
Yeah, that quote actually resonates more with me than anything, because it's like he says, you know, almost like it's unethical to say a cigar is bad. Well, right. So is it ethical to say this bad cigar is good then? Like, so what is he saying? That doesn't make any damn sense. And if somebody hates a cigar and gives it a good review for either to not piss off the manufacturer or because somebody, you know, buys ads from them or something, you know, where they're scared that, oh, they won't send me, you know, review samples anymore. That's total bullshit.
Right.
And you have absolutely no credibility at that point. Like, yeah. I don't care. Nothing whatever comes after that is all bullshit. I don't listen to nothing else ever again from that person. you know? You can't do that. Like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of cigars that I don't like, you know, but I don't know, man. I don't think it's unethical to say you don't like a cigar, you know? I mean, hell, like you said, like, you can't, like, everybody makes, you know, cigars that might not just be very good, you know? I mean, it's okay. I mean, what the hell?
We're not giving out participation trophies to everybody. Like, that doesn't work.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
And when I hear people give that idea of don't publish a review if it's bad, the first thing I think of is that if you don't publish reviews if they're bad, then if I look at your site and I don't see a review for that cigar, there's two possibilities. One is you just didn't get a chance to review it, or two, you didn't like it. Right. But if it's not on there, I can't find that out from you. So I just have to assume you don't like that cigar because I don't know what you reviewed and what you didn't review, right? So
there's a subjectivity, yeah.
Yeah.
Capacity, yeah.
You lose credibility as the source for the review, you know? Yeah. I mean, Charlie said that the SBC 16 had burn issues. What am I going to club Charlie? Like, right. I fucking love the guy. I got no problems with him, you know?
Right.
He's entitled to his opinion.
Yep. You know, yeah. Ben, this got me – when this whole came up, there was something – this is why I actually want to bring it up on the show as well because it was – Your former partner Jerry Cruz, right? Uh-huh. Jerry would tell it like it is, right? And I remember, was it Pete Johnson? He killed a cigar once.
Oh yeah.
And I forget what the cigar was. And people like the Tatawahi people, basically. And this is what happens when you do a bad review with a popular brand. What happens? The masses come out, right? And they just bash Jerry, right? Pete actually came out and said, look. I think the guy, you know, the guy just didn't like the cigar. You know, Pete was really cool about it, actually.
Oh, I know. Let me tell you about an interaction I've had with Pete about this kind of the same thing, right?
Right.
So he brought out, it was a Fausto and the
La Casita Criolla.
Yeah, okay. The La Casita Criolla, that's the one, right?
Yeah.
So everybody had that on their list of the top cigar of the year, like,
yep.
Really?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I do not like that cigar at all. I don't like it. You know, and I remember, like, Brian Hewitt, who still actually does on the site a little bit, he had that as, like, he wanted that to be his cigar of the year. And I'm like, man, what am I missing here? I remember I probably smoked through two boxes of that cigar trying to figure out, what the hell am I missing? Why do people love this so much and I don't like it? And then finally, I saw Pete at the show, and I'm like, man, I have to tell you, I don't like that cigar at all. He said, uh-huh. He said, but I bet you love the Fausto. And I'm like, yeah, I do love the Fausto. He says, right. He said, I can't make I can't make a cigar for, you know, that pleases everybody. That's why I got those two lines. You'll like this one or you'll like this one.
Right.
That's the way he sees it, right? And that's a great way to see that, you know?
Everything can't be number one on the list. Eventually something's going to fall to the bottom of the list is what I always say.
Yeah.
It's just that – that's just the reality of that. You know, that's kind of where I think, you know, ultimately something's gonna fall to the bottom. But you know, to Aaron's point, and I remember, like, Seth, right? When Seth started out his site, right, it was he only reviewed stuff 90 and above, and he soon realized he couldn't do that anymore because of what, just to Aaron's point, exactly. So it was either Seth was assumed he liked everything, but people weren't looking at the stuff maybe he didn't like. So he had to change it very quickly.
Yeah.
And he changed it with the Seth Humidor.
Yeah, and I tell you something, actually Skip in the chat brought this up too. It's a counterpoint to what I just said about, he said, when you give a good cigar a bad review, all you do is discredit yourself. That is 100% true.
Absolutely true.
Yeah.
Absolutely true. Ben, you remember, like, I think you remember this, right? When the La Carême came out by Crown Heads.
Yes, I know where you're going.
And I was in the shop, and I'm smoking this thing, and this thing's terrible, right? And I messaged you. I'm like, Ben, have you smoked this thing yet? And you were kind of in agreement with me on that, right? It just wasn't ready, right?
Yeah.
Now, normally my review cycle takes longer, so I don't review stuff right off the truck. And in this case, it was something where I was – when I got to it finally, it was – the cigar was a completely different cigar. It shouldn't have been shipped when it was shipped, right? But I take a longer review cycle, so it did better, right? But when that thing hit, it's bad. And now, unfortunately, I think it's fair game to review it. You know, if that's how you review cigars off the truck, if that's what you're doing, it's fair game. But don't say this cigar is like a 95 when it's like clearly it's not. It's young. I mean, that's where to Skip's point. That's where the problem is.
Yeah, and actually, that's when one of the times I learned that John takes these negative feedback not very well.
He got on Jerry about the Hedley Greens, didn't he? About the sophomore jinx as well.
Yeah.
I remember that one too.
Yeah, I mean, and I will admit that the La Carême became an amazing cigar. It's one of my favorites now.
Totally agree. But man, I went back and asked for my money back, and I never do that. I said, this thing ain't ready. It shouldn't be on the shelf. But if I'm a guy who reviews cigars and the first week it's out, that cigar could have easily been destroyed. I don't think media can destroy. We talked about this, Aaron and I, last week. I don't think media can destroy a brand.
It's
not happened. Yeah, it's never happened.
You have to see us as just somebody else's opinion about something, right? Well, none of us are like the end all authority on a cigar, right? I mean, it's just somebody's opinion. If you like the same stuff that I like, the same, then if I review something good or review something bad, it's probably you're going to not like it or you're going to like it too. All of us have, our own unique palates. You find somebody that is kind of the same as you, and you can kind of use it as a baseline when you go to the cigar shop. Like, oh yeah, Ben said that's the cigar. Let me try that one real quick, or whatever. I mean, that's just the way I see it. I don't see nothing as us as a, like, we're not writing a new tobacco Bible or nothing, It's just an opinion, somebody else's opinion. But like the La Carême, that one was really hard one to review because we got up at the show. I didn't think the show ones were very good either. I thought that was actually the worst of the bunch, really. And we don't review show samples anyway, but I remember thinking, man, I hope this isn't what's going to come out and when it hits the shelves. And then a few months later, I mean, it's when I was living in Houston. And I went to Sirius Cigars, and I remember having it there. I'm like, God damn, this thing is still terrible.
Yeah,
I don't understand it.
Yeah.
So my dilemma was like, people are asking me, "Hey, when are you going to review it?" And I'm smoking it. And I'm like, this thing is off. I think it needs more time. So my thought was, I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait a little bit, and because I think it's going to get better. Like, I will see it's the real, stripes of this cigar in a. Maybe 6 months or a year. So like, I'm going to wait and review it then. But then I thought, well, wait a minute. I mean, this is what people are getting now. So should I review this now as it sits? So that's kind of like what you got to deal with. Juggle that.
It just so happened that it went into my review. Like, what happened is when I asked for the refund, I sent all the cigars back. I bought it probably a month later. Then it just went through a normal cycle of like sitting in the humidor for few weeks, and then I got to it. So I didn't kind of change anything other than, well, if I was asking for my money back, I bought five cigars that I've asked for my money on. The one I smoked, I got a return of the other ones. It was like kind of silly. So but that's what I ended up doing. And like I said, it just turned out that it got it settled. Those cigars settled when I rebought them. They were just, I don't know if they were already on the shelves for a while, but it just was a different cigar. It was a totally different cigar.
Yeah,
I really want what a bunch of guys, like an army, to attack somebody who gives me shit review. I mean, I think that's pretty fucking awesome. I just sit back and just, you handle my light work. That's cool.
Mike, the worst blowback I ever got on a review was an 89.
Really?
Wow.
Steve Saka. It wasn't Saka. It was the Saka Nation that got on me. It was on the Sin Compromiso, and that's the worst. I've given cigars a lot lower than that. That was by far the, and I've talked about it many times, the worst blow, because it was like, how dare I give that cigar at 89? It was like pretty much people thought I was nuts. It just didn't hit me. Yeah,
it wasn't for you.
It wasn't for me. It wasn't. And Saka was even cool about it. He says like, look, he didn't crucify me. I don't think people review a cigar to do a hatchet. I don't shouldn't say it. There probably are some people who review cigars for hatchet job, as we saw this week. Most of the reviewers who are legitimate reviewers out there don't do that. I was accused once of it, but it was a long time ago.
No, I can't. I could never fathom doing something like that. I mean, we've been to too many factories, seen these artisans in action, and see the hard work that really goes in developing a cigar and getting it, you know, to market to where you just destroy something like that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I can't do that. Like I said, I would rather just skip that cigar to review than to really decimate it, just to decimate it, for, you know? I just... Because every time I pick up a cigar, you know, I kind of think back to our trips to like the Drew Estate or General or La Aurora or wherever we go and see the passion that's actually put into all of these different cigars to where, you know, I can kind of see it kind of goes back to, I guess, what John said, you know, about, you know, the artisans and all that. And I see his point. I know what he's trying to get at, you know, and I kind of feel the same way, but. Then again, I don't think a lot of these guys are putting out something that we could really do a true hatchet job on. None of these, there's not a lot of stuff out there that deserved to be just decimated anyway, you know?
You know, I was talking with Aaron about this last week too. I find a lot of, and Mike, I'm not going to lump you into this by any means, but I've seen many times if you criticize the packaging, it's sometimes worse than criticizing the blend. Because the people who, a lot of brand owners are very intimately involved with that packaging. And I almost find that there's much more sensitivity with that at times.
Hey, man, I've worked really hard on that.
That's cool. I love your packaging.
Like, I mean, you know, I can see that, you know, because people have visions. And when it comes to light, sometimes it's right. Not what you thought it was going to be, yeah. You know.
I mean, you can always say, and again, you've gotten very good scuff from Nika Sueña, so I'm not putting you in this category, certainly. But, I got really shit from the factory. You know, it's kind of the, and right. yeah, you can always, you know, that wasn't me. The artist in hands, I didn't, you know, I just got that brand. But, you know, the packaging is something they were involved with. So that's, I tend to see that taken a lot more personal, especially in a lot of the Charlie reviews, too, where they really go into the packaging. I see a lot of sensitivity towards that.
Yeah, well, Charlie's just angry. I mean, there's nothing we can do about that.
Well, Aaron's more angry.
You know?
Yeah, okay. I mean, I'll say some negative things about the packaging, but to me, the packaging doesn't matter how the cigar smokes. Like, it's that's a completely separate thing.
Flavor.
Like, yeah, it doesn't. Packaging doesn't play into the review at all.
Well, but, you know, I mean, there is some argument that there is some relativity there, right?
For a consumer to purchase, yeah, I can see that.
Right.
But in regards to our reviews, that doesn't matter.
Even like the mental connection, right? Like, I mean, there's a reason why there are bans on cigars, right?
Sure.
And, you know, there's something about a good-looking band that adds to the flavor in your head, you know?
It makes something even look more premium.
Right.
It makes it feel like, if, you know, in the end, it may look average when it's naked, but it's like, you know... The band is going to dress it up, you know?
Oh, yeah. I've heard plenty of consumers tell me they picked out a cigar because the band looked cool.
Yeah.
I hear that a lot, you know?
I think to some extent, a lot of people, I mean, if I see a really something that's intriguing with the band, I'm going to pick it up. I mean, but the difference is I know about a lot of the releases ahead of time.
Right.
So it's a little tough. But, you know, if I see something a little out of the ordinary, I'm gonna pick it up.
You know, I got to be honest, I kind of enjoy smoking something that's fucking terrible every once in a while. You know, it's true because, like, you know, you light it up and, you know, like Mike and I will do it on the Patreon sometimes. We'll smoke a cigar. We're like, what in the fuck were these guys thinking? Like, this is terrible. And, you know, you bail on it eventually, but it's kind of crazy to think some of the flavor profiles that people put together or maybe lack thereof as far as thought process.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's I don't know, for whatever fucking sick reason, I find it entertaining to some degree, you know? It's like, God, this is just bad, you know?
Agree. All right. Anything else, guys, on that?
No.
All right. I said I wouldn't keep you 4 hours, so. But no, Mike, Ben, I want to thank you guys. For being a part of the panel discussion, Eric as well. I know Eric. Eric actually messaged me as well. I totally understand. So look forward to the next time we could do this.
Yes.
Aaron, anything you on your end before I kind of close it out?
No, I think we're good.
Okay. Buy the samplers, I guess, right?
Yep, there's a 20% off this Labor Day weekend. So take advantage of that to buy the samplers.
Buy the samplers, whichever ones you want. So be very Google.
Just the Bell Palace one.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't worry about the other ones.
Oh, good. I'm not winning, so I already know I'm not winning. So, Aaron, you have a shot not to win. So let's see. All right. Just a note on a programming note. Next week's show. I guess we got these guys on next week. We have the protocol guys, Juan Cancel and Kevin on next week. We will not be doing man crushes next week. I will give you a stone of the audience. I can promise you there will be no man crush segment with that. I'm stone cold.
We'll see.
No, it's not happening.
What about Speedos? How many Speedos are we gonna get to see?
That's God, please.
Yeah, that's different.
Please no. So that will be next week's show. And then we have next Thursday, primetime episode 155. So you want to tune in for that. Anyway, that's going to wrap up primetime episode 154 into the annals of history for Thursday, September 3rd. Now Friday, September 4th on the East Coast. We'll see everybody next week. Have a great night, everybody.
Thanks, guys.